We've got a good military, and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Monday, August 10th, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. I was actually just adding the link as quick as I could to the show notes so you guys could have that before it started, and there was a 2-minute gap. Thank you for joining me today, those that have come over to the backup channel for our show today. It's going to be an interesting special show today because there's going to be, you know, the whole focus about this is going to be, in my opinion, or rather, let's say for this, let's put it this way, from my perspective, this whole thing today, the censorship of our channel, the suppression of everything, the fact that on our backup channel, mind you, when 33 people are waiting, 15 downvotes are from these trolls, these people that are following us. So the point is that there's a entities out there that are very aware of people that are talking about certain things, which is why you see coordinated censorship. I don't mean necessarily with our channel. I just mean throughout the times we've been seeing censorship, you see very clear coordinated censorship, multi-platform, multi-individuals. You see this all the time. So now we're going to start off with a quick mention of why that's happening and why I think it's happening about the topics likely we're going to get into today, as well as any number of other things in regard to the kind of things that tend to get censored by the kind of trolls that we're dealing with, whether we're talking about the foreign policy aspects or the invasions or the occupations and all this different stuff. But before we get started, I want to ask everybody out there to take a moment, right this moment, and share the link. Go out there and share it, and on your social media, share the link, you know, comment for other, you know, whatever you can do to help this link get out there so people can know where we are, because we are being suppressed and censored. And I will start off by showing you that. But before, just so you know what we're talking about today, as the title maybe didn't give you enough information, it's clear that there's a regime change taking place in Lebanon. Now, whether that's natural or something else, it's up for you to decide. I'll give you more information on it. But we're also going to go into some more information about the kind of Gates-backed health cabal that we're seeing here, and an article that was written in 2019, just before this all started, about exactly what we should be concerned about now. The Bill Gates-backed health consultancies that are basically ubiquitous, pervasive, according to people that are talking about what was happening then. Imagine how it is now. As well as the blast in Beirut and who benefits from it, which I think is a huge part of why this discussion is being censored today, because there's a lot coming out today about the reality that this was not some simple accident, but there was far, far more involved with why it happened, whether it was a sabotage act or whether it was an actual direct bombing or however you want to talk about it, which, by the way, we should be allowed to discuss openly as theories that we may have without being censored by, you know, authoritarian oligarchy pandering platforms like YouTube. But, you know, they just don't like you thinking for yourself, which this should make very clear. But to show you right before, to begin, is the censorship, or not this, but this here, that I put out this today. And this is the actual image. This is the video, Scientists Now Want Lithium in Your Water, which was simply an article based on a study that I showed you. And I simply showed you why lithium was dangerous and all the side effects that are verifiably posted by the groups that they're referencing. But yet, I don't know if that was the point. Here's the great thing about this ridiculous, nebulous process is that you don't even know what you did wrong, as well as the fact that I talked about Lebanon's 9/11 being all but ignored, and it was, by the mainstream media. And I went over information within that that you should be able to discuss. But nope, not this time. But guess what's interesting? We got a strike this time, as you're well aware, since we're on the backup channel, which means I can't post, live stream, upload anything for a week. And if I get another one of those within the next couple of weeks, I could potentially lose my whole channel. Now, the point is, you have to get a strike. Guess what? You need a warning first. And since we haven't had any of those, at first I thought, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. But it does make sense once you jump over here and realize, oh, I see. So that March 10th warning that they already ruled on and said that I was correct and pulled back their block, they just removed that and put it back out there again so they could stand on that warning and hit me with a strike. That is called, I mean, there's not even some stretch where you could say that you're fighting, you know, fake news or you're fighting against foreign entities. That is them willfully, knowingly breaking their own rules. Whether that's because somebody back there decided that I'm, you know, politically incorrect, they don't like what I'm saying, or whether the entire company is online and on track with whatever this narrative is. At the end of the day, they pulled up an old, already ruled on warning and put it back on my account. It's from March 10th. I already appealed it, and in fact, I already proved that on this show because I've showed you the screen before where it showed you that it was already dealt with. It didn't say appeal under the actions right there. It said resolved, and now it doesn't anymore. You know why? Again, to reiterate, just in case you missed it, because they needed that warning to be able to give me this strike. So why would they do that? My point is because whatever's going to be talked about today in the next week is probably something they don't want certain people talking about. Or maybe it's because of any other number of reasons, but whatever end of the day, they created a fake situation to be able to penalize me because they don't want me talking. That's very clear. There is no way to misunderstand that. Because again, if there's always going to be people that will say I'm lying, maybe I have to dig up the video. Maybe one of you guys can do that for me. Dig up the old video. Probably right after March 10th, where I talked about this. And then the ones following where I ended up showing that it was resolved. You don't just get to up and unresolve these things after you make your decision. That's them lying, cheating, stealing, manipulating. The video, as always, is still on BitChute, because BitChute is not an authoritarian, dictatorship-level kind of idea that panders to the oligarchy to be able to get what they want. No, this is an outlet that still allows you to speak your mind. And there's more coming, by the way. But BitChute is one right now, one of the few that is allowing this stuff. Scientists now want lithium in your water. Lebanon, 9/11, all but ignored. You can still watch it right here. Now to start, who profits from the Beirut blast? Pepe Escobar always doing a fantastic job. Again, I've mentioned him numerous times. Somebody that I really hope that you're aware of and keeping tabs on because he does incredible work. Who profits from the Beirut blast? Always a question we should be asking. Always. K. Bono, who benefits? This is a classic concept because it tends to lead you to the truth. This is something that detectives, researchers in general, you know, before it was a politicized concept when they were trying to hide the fact that all politicians and all of our government systems are blatantly lying and cheating and stealing from us. The idea is that you could actually decide, hey, follow the money. Who benefits, right? And find out who has the most motivation. And in this case, you're going to find out, guess what? It's exactly who you might think, and not some accidental thing that just happened randomly because of negligence, which is so easy to see it's not true. And also, pretty interesting that it seems to be the same template-level narrative they just apply to any situation against their bad guy narrative enemies. Iran, they're so negligent. Look at Venezuela, their power went out. They're so negligent. Oh, except the fact that we sabotaged. Oh, don't talk about that, right? I mean, and this is, by the way, stuff that's been shown. Venezuela, Iran, we've already proven to you that they openly carried out activities to undermine the governments and what they needed to do to make sure that their populace was taken care of. Whether that's starvation or power, it's the same concept. And right now, by the way, the starvation is still happening in Yemen. The starvation is still happening all around the world, including in places like Syria, where they're burning their wheat fields. And I mean, this is happening in Lebanon now, which is the point. Because this port, as we also mentioned, as Pepe mentions in this article, was the most important economic port in the area, in all of Lebanon, as I understand it. Or at the very least in Beirut. But the point is, and I'm only saying that because I'm off the top of my head on this, and I don't want to make sure I don't send you in the wrong direction, but this is the same idea in regard to Yemen. If you wanted to effectively just destabilize this country, if you wanted to effectively dismantle their economic process and the fact that, and I mean, in regard to how these people are going to feed their families and keep their businesses running, this was a focal point. The same thing with Yemen as they attacked the port of Hodeidah, which has left that country in ruin. So we have to think about who benefits. As he says, the narrative that the Beirut explosion was an exclusive consequence of negligence and corruption by the current Lebanese government is now set in stone. Right? Isn't it interesting how this is, think about, I mean, this, okay, I have to make this point very clear. This is in regard to like exactly what's going on with COVID-19. Suddenly my camera seems very, there we go. It's interesting to think that, especially, and this is, I have to add this too, especially groups like the U.S. government that have been caught over and over and over and over and over making up narratives and lying to you, that they come out with a narrative within like a week when no investigation has been done, and they just say, well, intelligence, and we know this is what happened. No one proves anything, no one says anything, and we just grab it and run with it, right? China did it. Lebanon negligence. Maybe. But why don't we ask, or why aren't we allowed to be like, hey, maybe they're making it up again to sell you on something they want to achieve? It's just ridiculous that we can't think like that. I argue most people do, but the media projects that false majority as nobody believes it, and then we self-perpetuate the same thing. But we have to see how crazy that is. How in the world can they stand up and say, it was negligence, they did this and they did that, and that's why it all happened, while the building was still burning down? Or what buildings, why the area, the port, the whole thing was still burning and on fire. And they're saying, here's what happened. We know everything. How is that not incredibly suspicious? It obviously is. But there's people that want to gaslight and make sure that we don't talk about things in a certain light. Or, you know, censor channels that might do so. And it says, and yet, digging deeper, we find that negligence and corruption, going back to the article itself, negligence and corruption may have been fully exploited via sabotage to engineer it. Now, by the way, of all people, someone like Pepe Escobar or any number of people like this have this, you know, someone who is well respected, somebody who was an excellent analyst, researcher, journalist for a very long time. For them to come out and say something like this, and he's not the kind of person that will say this is what happened without backing it up, which is why he says here that it could be. Digging deeper, we find that negligence and corruption may have been fully exploited via sabotage to engineer it, because he's not the kind of person that will sell you on a certainty without knowing so. But the reality is that there's no certainty on the other side either. This is where the story leads you. They just don't want you looking there. Now, remember that Trump said, briefed by our generals, and this has been used as a way, and I think this was the whole point of this, to actually make it seem as if that's not the case, and it may not be. But it's interesting that he came out and put this in, saying that it was a bomb of some kind, or, you know, so our intelligence told us, according to them. They would know better than I would, but they seem to think it was an attack. Which, by the way, is interesting because Esper came out in a weird way yesterday to, like, patch that up and said, well, it's not clear if Beirut port was an explosion, was an accident, or an attack. Right? And if you listen to this, he goes, well, because, you know, Trump was right when he said that it may have been because we didn't sure, even though they went and came right out and said, no, it wasn't. And then maybe it was. And it's just, this is meant to be uncertain. That's what it is. But there's no actual tangible evidence other than claims coming from career liars. Doesn't that sound familiar? Now, Trump eventually walked his comments back after the Pentagon declined to confirm his claim about what the generals had said. And his defense secretary, Mark Esper, supported the accident explanation for the blast. It's not another graphic illustration, or said it's yet another graphic illustration of the war engulfing the Beltway. Trump, attack, Pentagon, accident. And that is weird that we keep seeing that. This disconnect between what he's saying, which I do believe in some ways is an intentional they're trying to lead you astray. Get you arguing amongst yourselves, left versus right, whatever it ends up being. But it basically all boils down to an very embarrassing perspective for the world, that we don't even know what's going on within our own country. The president says one thing, they say another, the American people argue, and we're just in chaos. Maybe that's what they want it to look like. He says, I don't think anybody can say right now, Trump said on Wednesday. I've heard it both ways. Now, it says, still, it's worth noting a report by Iran's Mer 8 news agency that 4 U.S. Navy reconnaissance planes were spotted near Beirut at the time of the blast. Now, by the way, the very first person I saw point that out was Titus Frost on Twitter, which I shared and, you know, was disparaged underneath, oh, conspiracy theory, but very relevant to any honest investigator. Oh, well, what do you know? 4 Navy reconnaissance planes were spotted near Beirut at the time of the blast. Very suspicious, but let's pretend like even calling that out is some kind of conspiracy. Even suggesting maybe they were involved in some way, you're so crazy because they've never been involved in nefarious acts before. Like, it's just, that's the kind of gaslighting that we need to laugh at. Like, they are either willfully covering up the reality because they feel it suits their agenda or their political side, or they're ridiculously ignorant in this regard, that they are actually still in this day and age blindly trusting their government, which is outrageous. But onto the ammonium nitrate. He says security at Beirut's port. And this is the nation's prime echo. So again, I was correct on that. I want to make sure I'm never off the top. I speak off the cuff a lot. When I do, I try to make sure that I'm not saying things that are even somewhat incorrect, as even though everyone will make mistakes. But it is indeed the nation's prime economic hub, which is perfectly in line with basically every other action that's been taken against their adversaries in the same kind of evolution of the story. They do something, right? They shoot people in their protests. They have negligence. They have an explosion. They have a blackout. And suddenly there's a drive and a call for regime change because they're so negligent and their people are suffering, and they push in and cause the whole country to collapse, because that's liberation in the eyes of the U.S. government, apparently. But that's happened over and over and over and over. And here we are again. And again, it could actually just be some organic thing. It could actually just be some negligence and explosion. But all of the actual evidence and nuance within the story shows you that what their narrative is simply not true. Still doesn't mean that it necessarily isn't some kind of an accident. I don't think it is. But understand, their narrative is simply not true. The explosion that was caused was too big to be caused by what they said it was. And the fact that ammonium nitrate is not simply just ignited by fire, which we'll get into in a moment. So they're not giving us the truth. That has to be acknowledged, right? I mean, that's very clear at this point. Now, as they said, would have to be considered a top priority, which it was, right? This is the idea that this is somewhere they've already, and think about in the context of, Gaza, Syria, where they say, oh, look, a rocket that we can't prove, and then bomb four locations that they already had pinpointed. And those locations being, strategic military locations that they already wanted to bomb. So same idea. This would be one of them. And as we've already pointed out, Israel already pinpointed this location on two different posts being an Iran location. Now it says the ship was de facto abandoned by its owner. Now this is the general narrative we're getting. I personally have not been able to this is a narrative that's coming through. But to not make it more complicated, I have not been able to verify this is exactly the way it went down. That doesn't mean it's not the exact way that it went down. But I'm hearing a couple of different things. And actually, Pepe Escobar's research seems to combine these a little bit. Now, here's what he says. The ship was de facto abandoned by its owner. This is the ship that supposedly had the ammonium nitrate. By shady businessman Igor, whatever his last name is. Grekushkin. Now, he suspiciously lost interest in his relatively precious cargo. I mean, regardless of what you think it's used for or what it is, it's worth money. Quite a bit, actually. So, why did he just suddenly lose interest in it? Not even trying to sell it. Dumping style to pay off its debts, right? Like just getting rid of it because he's screwed. He's in a bad position. No, he just left. That doesn't necessarily prove anything, but it is very suspicious, almost as if the plan was to make sure it ended up there. Or at least after it did, make sure that it stayed there, which is what it seems more likely to me. Now it says, I'm going to call him Igor. Igor never paid his crew, who barely survived for several months before being repatriated on humanitarian grounds. Interesting. Now, the individual from Cyprus, or excuse me, the Cyprus government confirmed that there was no request to Interpol from Lebanon to arrest him. Now, also remember the dynamic here that we've touched on in the past, but not recently, that there is a lot of corruption in Lebanon. There's a lot of people in, and this applies to most of these adversarial countries from the view of Israel and the United States, that there's a lot of people, like for instance, look at Iraq. Iraq is clearly still struggling to fight, to break free from this obvious occupation, illegal. But at the same time, there's also a hell of a lot of people in the Iraqi government that are clearly working at the behest of the U.S. government and Israel. And so that is what happens when they force their way in. And they continue to force their way into foreign entities, their policies for their own benefit. So that's been happening in Lebanon for a long time. But there's still, Hezbollah in general is something that is clearly antithetical to the U.S. and Israeli agendas. But there's people within the Lebanese government, which a lot of people have been covering well lately, that are problematic, the people that could have been involved with allowing this kind of thing to happen. And that's where he goes with this. So the point being that they've never requested him to be arrested, that shows you an interesting thing, or interesting, why not? This guy comes with a huge boat full of a dangerous substance, just leaves it and runs. Shouldn't that become some kind of legal process? Well, it wasn't. That seems suspicious. Now, and again, that could, in your mind, reflect on the entirety of the government of Lebanon, and maybe it would. But why, again, the question be, why would they do this to themselves? Seeing as how they have families, they have interests in these areas. Now, and again, especially since it's the most economically important area in the country. Now, it says the whole op feels like a cover, and I agree with him. He says, with the real recipients of the ammonium nitrate possibly being, and this was what I was just referencing, moderate rebels in Syria who use it to make IEDs and equip suicide trucks, such as the one that demolished the Al-Kindi Hospital in Aleppo. Now, remember that this is the kind of stuff that is used by these moderate rebels. Not by the Lebanese government that has access to a hell of a lot more powerful. I mean, any number of people that they claim are involved in this. Of course, you could argue this is something that they would use to distance themselves from it, I guess, despite the fact that there's an obvious paper trail right to the Lebanese government and with Hezbollah involved as well, right? The idea that this is something that they did to themselves with a paper trail just seems pretty stupid. But see, they want you to think, well, because they're just dumb and incompetent and negligent. It all makes sense. You know, Assad's just a maniac, likes to kill people and children. So that makes sense, which people love to gobble up because we know that there are bad people out there. But the kind of, if you ask in your mind, if what entity out there, when you say they just like to kill people and, you know, bomb children and conquer countries, who comes to your mind, right? Is it Assad? Not really. Now, they say that's what happens in these countries. These guys do bad, evil things, but they don't really prove them. And it leads to this kind of destabilization, which they then point back to and blame them for. So this bomb or however else it goes is being laid at their feet, despite all of the evidence. Circumstantial and otherwise. And we even see a trail here in regard to the fact that this looks, and this is the unconfirmed report as well, in regard to Saudi Arabia specifically, that this was ultimately a rat line of munitions and different necessary tools to overthrow Assad, or however you want to look at it, that were being sent there and they were stopped. And then it was left in Lebanon and made to stay there. Now, from 2014 to 2017, letters from the customs officials, he says a series of them, as well as proposed options to get rid of the dangerous cargo, exported it or otherwise selling it, were simply ignored. So understand that this represents a clear effort from people in Lebanon to move this. Proposed options to get rid of the cargo, to export it, to sell it, ignored it. Which also suggests an entity that from within their same area that ignored it, right? So you can see it from two sides. Now, every time they tried to get a legal decision to dispose of the cargo, they got no answer from the Lebanese judiciary. Now, when Lebanese prime minister, who just, by the way, resigned today, which we'll get to in a moment, proclaims those responsible will pay the price. So again, interesting that he is one of the ones resigning, really all of their government, it seems. He says context is essential. Neither the prime minister nor the president nor any of the cabinet ministers knew that the ammonium nitrate was stored in Hangar 12. Think about that. This is a good, what the point is, and these are claims coming from, this is stuff that you should research for yourself. But the reality is that you can easily understand how this is the idea with the influence coming from outside, that there are people in certain places that could effectively keep this out of the knowledge of the government itself, or specifically the Lebanese government we're talking about here. The cabinet ministers, the president, the prime minister. And according to Pepe Escobar, they had no idea it was even there. Now he says the bureaucracy at Beirut's port and the mafias who are actually in charge are closely linked to, among others, Mostakbal faction, as you can see right here. Which, by the way, the point being, is led by former Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri himself, fully backed by the House of Saad. So you can see a clear connection in regard to, as they're pointing out, the location that matters, the bureaucracy at the port where this took place, the people who are in charge of the flow of information, the port itself, these are the people who have clear connections to the House of Saad, who clearly is waging a campaign against Lebanon along with Israel and the United States. So that's interesting. So it seems very clear that you could see a way that this could happen where the government has no idea that this is going on. I mean, think about how our country operates and how much goes on different sides that people just have no idea about. So let's not, I mean, they'd like to try to frame foreign bad guy governments as they see them as being all encompassing, right? Anything, anywhere comes out of Lebanon, it's their fault Lebanon government did it, right? Anything even has a Chinese hint to it, well, the Chinese government's doing it. The ridiculously stupid reductive narrative that they use that they will not allow you to apply to them, even though we actually should at this point. Just look at them as the government, not left and right, but the government. Doesn't apply to them, right? There's all nothing but nuance when you dive into the two-party system. Of course, only applies to them. Now, it says no wonder the current government, where we have Prime Minister Daib backed by Hezbollah, has not been informed about the ammonium nitrate. Now, it's interesting also to note that the people who are now resigning right now are the people that were not in the know of what was going on. So you're basically carrying out a regime change today, removing the very people who were the ones left, the ones that were not towing the line. Let's just assume that's coincidence. Now, so ammonium nitrate is quite stable. This is an important part, making it one of the safest explosives used in mining. Fire normally won't set it off. It becomes highly explosive only if contaminated, for instance, by oil, or heated to a point where it undergoes chemical changes that produce a sort of impermeable cocoon around it, which oxygen can build up to a dangerous level where an ignition can cause an explosion. Okay? Now, that is very different than what the narrative is. That apparently some fireworks, or rather the negligence of the people involved, allowed this stuff to just ignite and explode. Despite the fact that, as he points out, that it only becomes highly explosive if it's contaminated by oil, for instance, or heated to a point where it undergoes chemical changes and produces a sort of a cocoon, as it says, and can build up to, I mean, the point is that the situation there does not add up with the narrative we're being told, as well as the fact that the amount they claim was there is simply not capable of producing the level of explosion that we saw. And that has been scientifically shown. I mean, numerous people have actually gauged the seismic activity and on and on and on. I've gone over all those online. Now it says, why, after sleeping in Hangar 12 for 7 years, did this pile suddenly feel an itch to explode? Well, that's a great question. What it seems like to me is this was being left there as a last case scenario, as another option where they needed one. That the people that were there, the corrupt entities within the port, the bureaucracy that has ties back to Saudi Arabia as well as Israel, clearly because Israel's, in my opinion, completely... So I see Saudi Arabia as a vassal state of Israel. That's what I see it as. You could see the connection back to the very beginning. That's my take on it. It's up to you. These governments are controlling all kinds of things around the world. But the point is that you can see this control at the one area this took place. And that it's possible this was kept from their awareness until they needed to use it. So 7 years until suddenly some fireworks and, you know, just everything blows up. Now, so far, the prime straight to that point explanation by Middle East expert Elijah Manier, I believe, this is, you know, one of these social media influencers, to the tragedy being sparked literally by you have to understand, this is the actual narrative, and this is 9/11 level stupid, the kind of 9/11 level plot hole narrative. I mean, this is the most ridiculous thing I think remember what he just said about how this stuff works, that it has to be contaminated by oil, for instance, undergo chemical changes. Okay, so here's what they say. This tragedy was literally sparked by a clueless blacksmith with a blowtorch operating quite close to an unsecured ammonium nitrate. That's it. So a spark flew from a blacksmith who, of course, let's ignore for the moment that they have a blacksmith operating next to a whole area full of ammonium nitrate, because I'm sure that blacksmith would, you know, that's just so much there doesn't make sense. But the point that one spark or even a bunch of sparks could fly and land on this ammonium nitrate that needs to be contaminated, for instance, by oil. And it, I mean, it doesn't just spark and explode. That's not how it works. I mean, you could see a bunch of people right now who are the kind of people who know about this stuff who are telling you this right now. This doesn't make sense. Of course, but people will choose to listen to politicians and mainstream media. You know, people that don't know anything about what they're talking about. They point to experts and then say what they want. Crazy. Sparked by a clueless blacksmith. Unbelievable. Well, I just happened to see this in the comments, somebody about the fireworks. I mean, the argument I understand about the fireworks is that they were just fireworks there, stored in the area. There's also the discussion that there was a wheat silo. And isn't it funny how these things popped up right in the beginning? And online, all the people that were fighting to keep the narrative were saying, oh, there was a whole wheat silo. Don't you know how explosive that can be? Right? That had nothing to do with what happened. Right? I mean, it's so incredible how people will grasp at whatever they can to tell you you're dumb for looking at the facts. Crazy. Right? I mean, this is the thing. I'm not telling you I know what happened. I'm not telling you this is what happened. I'm saying this is interesting and it should be information that you should consider when you come to your conclusion. On the other side, they're saying this is what happened, and if you think anything else, you're crazy, and we're going to censor you. What seems more logical to you? Think about that. That's where we are. Now, this scenario, though, does not explain... Oh, funny enough, here he gets right into it after you ask the comment. Does not explain the initial fireworks explosion. And certainly does not explain why no one, at least in the West... Oh, I see. It was an excellently timed question, Northern Lights, because that's exactly the point. I thought you meant in general how they play into the explosion, but think about the timing of it, right? That's the point Pepe's making here, and I assume Northern Lights was making as well. The fact that if they're claiming a spark flew from a blacksmith which ignited the ammonium nitrate, the argument would, I guess, be that they were just fireworks present that got caught by stuff afterward, except that the fireworks were exploding before that thing started. We saw this, remember? We saw the minor explosion with the fireworks and then the larger one explode. So that doesn't line up. But you see, they don't want you to think about the narrative. They don't want you to just accept it, right? You can't challenge what the World Health Organization says. That's just, you can't challenge what the government says. You can't challenge, that's where we're going. You can't challenge the official narrative. Remember where that's from? That's YouTube. This is the official narrative on COVID-19 has all but imploded. Still can't challenge it though, right? Can't challenge this, even though it's very clearly doesn't make sense that the nitrate's too small or too, you know, that the fact that the spark can't light it, the fact that fireworks went off first, don't question it because they'll censor you. This will probably get censored too, but I don't care. Doesn't explain the fireworks explosion. Certainly does not explain what no one, at least in the West, is talking about. The deliberate fires set to the Iranian market in Ajam in the UAE. And also a series of food agriculture warehouses in Iraq immediately after the Beirut tragedy. Why does nobody, I mean, you could make the same argument. Now, the fact that this happened at the same time is what's interesting. But Israel has been openly bombing locations that they claim are Iranian and openly bombing Iraq and Syria and everywhere else, claiming that it's Iran, claiming that they're present, claiming that they will attack Iran anywhere they are present in the world. So doesn't that then, isn't that the most obvious clue that they're the ones involved in something that's going on here? They openly said that. They openly acknowledged that location as an Iranian location. And then we're just going to pretend like that doesn't lead you right to the feet of Israel's government. It doesn't prove they did it, but why is nobody pretending? This is the thing. I ask these questions when I know the answer. It's rhetorical. When you say, why aren't they showing? It's because the people in these circles know this. The media people, the government people, they are saying this because they do not want you looking at the truth. That's why. They have to know this stuff. There's only two kinds of people in this process. There's either the people in the media who are, you know, the Don Lemons of the world who don't care at all about news, who wanted to just to be actors and wanted to be, you know, entertainment news guys, and they forced him into being a news guy. So he's just playing a role. That's what he is. That's what most of these guys are, just talking heads. Most of them really not that intelligent. They're reading off of a screen. The point is that these are people that don't even realize that they're misleading you. They get all righteously, you know, indignant about the things they're saying, and they don't even really understand. They're blinded by the same propaganda that Joe Schmo in the corner is. So when we think about this, and we see multiple explosions at the same time in other locations, which the Israel and the U.S. have been focusing on, in the same circle and narrative as Lebanon, right? The same thing. The Houthis, Lebanon, Gaza, Syria, Iraq, the Iran-backed militias, the whole thing. I mean, we forget to mention, remember that I keep forgetting this, that the Kataeb party leader was killed as well in Lebanon, which is not the same thing as the group we're talking about in Iraq, but this is the same idea that this is a focal point for Israel and the United States. Now, follow the money is usually where this ends up. As he points out, Lebanon, boasting assets and real estate with worth trillions of dollars, is a juicy peach for global finance vultures. Think about right now what's happening. All the stuff that's changing, all these people we are being robbed blind by big business. So in the midst of all of this, What he's pointing out is that what's happening there, Lebanon in general, is a juicy peach for these same people. He says to grab the assets at rock bottom prices in the middle of the new Great Depression due to COVID-19, or their lies about it, is simply irresistible. In parallel, the IMF vultures would embark on full shakedown mode and finally, quote, forgive some of Beirut's debts as long as a variation on structural adjustments is imposed. Basically, if they allow to hand over the reins to a foreign power, well, sure, we'll forgive all of your, you know, debt slavery that we forced on you. The reality is that this is an obvious goal. And in the midst of this whole thing, as he says, to grab up these assets at rock bottom prices is irresistible to these exact people. And it seems that they pulled the trigger. Who profits in this case are the geopolitical and geoeconomic interests of the US, Saudi Arabia, and France. Now, obviously, in my opinion, I add Israel in there because of all of the obvious, openly stated military agendas that have to do with Lebanon. But he's talking in this case, well, he does mention geopolitical, but regardless of whether he mentions it or not, I think that's readily apparent. But it's clear that the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and France have clear interest here. So why aren't we asking these questions? He says it's no accident that President Macron, a dutiful Rothschild servant, arrived in Beirut Thursday to pledge Paris neocolonial support and all but impose, like a viceroy, a comprehensive set of reforms. Right? That's incredible. And this is right after it happened. Comes in screaming about how things need to change, and suddenly we see revolutions pop out. Why? I mean, think of why now? There's been so many other things that have happened. I mean, the fact that just because something, the interesting thing is when you dig into the story, you find that most Lebanese people blame Israel right now. Whether that's because Israel's been attacking them or because that's something, I mean, however you look at it, that's not being represented to you. Sort of how the Yellow Vest protest that went all around the world and back, and weeks and weeks, and they never talked about it. They keep these things from your view. They show you a protest of 30 people and say, everyone supports Israel, or whatever they want to, everyone supports the, SDF in Syria, and it's just not the case. They're lying to you. Surprise, surprise. But already a month ago, he points out, the IMF was, and this is, again, foreknowledge kind of stuff. A month ago, the IMF was warning that implosion in Lebanon was accelerating. And he says, this is happening amid a massive global asset grab, right now, COVID-19, characterized in the larger context by American GDP down by almost 40%. Arrays of bankruptcies, a handful of billionaires amassing unbelievable profits, and too big to fail mega banks duly bailed out with a tsunami of free money. Now, look, if you took exactly what they try to characterize Iran or Syria or Venezuela as, it would be exactly what he just described, right? A group of oligarch politicians that are enriching themselves on the back of suffering of their people. That's exactly what's happening right now. Our GDP down on 40%. Of course, half our country pretends that that's Democrats attacking Trump or whatever illusion that keeps you fighting yourselves instead of the real enemy. But the array of bankruptcies that are coming because they didn't protect you, right? Because you don't have money, because your business is going out of, you're being kicked out of your home. I mean, think of all these things are happening right now. Sure, you're going to give us a $400 check instead of a $600 check, or some people who have unemployment, even though my family still hasn't gotten their stimulus check. Still, by the way. People are losing their jobs, going bankrupt, being actually forced out of their homes because they can't pay rent, while the government made the choice based on false information to remove your life from you. And while all that's happening, and you can't feed your family, a handful of billionaires are amassing unbelievable profits. And these too-big-to-fail megabanks yet again got a massive bailout bigger than 2008. But Iran, bad guy, right? Because Syria, bad guy. Because that totally lines up. You're not the one. You're not the one robbing everybody and blaming other people. Of course not. Now, in regard to the effects of this, he says, once again, Israel is the proverbial elephant in the room, now widely depicted by Western corporate media as Lebanon's Chernobyl. A scenario like the Beirut catastrophe has been linked to Israeli plans since February 2016. Really take that in. A scenario like exactly what happened has been linked to the plans of Israel's government since February 2016. It also says that on the same day of the Beirut blast and following a series of suspicious explosions in Iran and high tension in the Syria-Israeli border, Prime Minister Netanyahu tweeted, as I already showed you, we hit a cell and now we hit the dispatchers. We will do what is necessary in order to defend ourselves. I suggest to all of them, including Hezbollah, to consider this. Okay, so they hit a cell, which they said openly was tied to Hezbollah. Then they say we hit the dispatchers. Doesn't that imply Hezbollah? Yes, it does. We will do what is necessary to defend ourselves, even though they were attacking other people and they weren't attacked first. And it's as I suggest to all of them, including Hezbollah, mentions them by name, to consider this. Yeah, but let's continue lying to ourselves that that's not connected to the explosion that happened at the same time while they were saying they were going to hit the dispatchers, or that they did. That he says that ties in with the intent openly proclaimed late last week, and this was before it happened, to bomb Lebanese infrastructure if Hezbollah harms Israeli defense forces or Israeli civilians, as well as the fact that Israel's on record more than once openly saying that they will attack civilian infrastructure of their enemies. We're going to go after water and things just like this. They've said it over and over. Of course, under the guise that because Gaza fires rockets that cause no damage, generally in the direction of civilians, even though I don't think that's actually what's happening, that they say, well, because they're trying to do that, we're going to murder your civilians. That's what they're saying. I mean, that's actually the translation. On top of that, I don't see any proof that they're actually firing rockets in this direction. I see evidence of claims of that. And actually, I'll have a point later that I'll show you why I think it's interesting what it actually looks like when there are rockets fired. But Saudi intelligence. Oh, well, actually, he says that this is an interesting point here. That Israel is interestingly not doing much right now, not saying much about this. Even though, you know, an Israeli politician came out and said this gave him joy and deleted his post, even though I saved it. And, you know, they said, yay, and then hid their expression. But the fact that he is essentially keeping this quiet seems to suggest that there's a plan that didn't develop and this got a little more serious. You know, maybe because the wife of a Dutch ambassador died, or maybe because a peacekeeping group that was there for the UN got seriously injured. Maybe because this got out of control and didn't end up being what they thought. So they pulled it back. But it says muddying the waters even more, Saudi intelligence, which has access to Mossad and demonizes Hezbollah way more than Israel, steps in. All the intel ops I talked to refused to go on the record, considered the extreme sensitivity of the subject. But still, he said, it must be stressed that a Saudi intel source whose stock in trade is frequent information exchanges with the Mossad asserts that the original target was Hezbollah missiles stored in Beirut's port, which, by the way, is actually what he says right here.
I don't know. You know, on the first day, as President Trump rightly said, we thought it might have been an attack. Some of us speculated it could have been, for example, a Hezbollah arms shipment that blew up, maybe a Hezbollah bomb-making facility.
Okay. So, you know, when they want to use that excuse to make it seem like, well, maybe it's just because they're making evil, dangerous bombs and it blew up because they're negligent. Right. Okay. So in that exact moment, you're telling me that it's not logical to be like, or somebody bombed it. No. That's crazy. That's conspiracy talk. Right. Like, why is one more step? Like, it's just so funny how desperately they hold on to their narrative. That's all they have anymore. But that's the interesting point, that there's a lot of information coming out from insiders that are saying that this was an attack on what they thought, or maybe it was, a store of Hezbollah missiles. Now, the point is, is it illegal for them to have missiles? No, it's not. Is it illegal for them to buy missiles from other countries? No, it's not. So the only point is that if this is something that they don't want them to have, I mean, the same logic would be that, I don't know, that Russia could bomb missile locations inside the United States because they don't want them to have missiles. Does that seem legal? Does that seem okay? No. The only reason people go along with this is because they say Lebanon, bad guy, Hezbollah, bad guy. They do evil, bad things because president says, right? There's no logic to it. They say, and they point to things. See, here's the proof. They're pointing to claims made by intelligence that were still not backed up by proof. That's what they point back to claims they made before. That's what they keep doing. I'm not saying that there's not things that are done that you would be unokay with. The point is that there's nothing that they have ever shown you that proves that these things are either Iran-backed anythings or that there is, in fact, some nefarious terrorist activity that's going on other than fighting off illegal occupation. But many people have been saying that this was, in fact, an attack on this location because they said they had missiles there. And what ultimately panned out was that this was an attack on this location, and they were going to blame it on Lebanon, but it got way out of control. Whether that's maybe because the ammonium nitrate that they didn't factor in or because of something else that's going on, which still doesn't make sense to me. But I find it very revealing. And why is nobody else wanting to talk about this? I think you know why. Now, it says his story is that Prime Minister Netanyahu was about to take credit for the strike. That's why he put this tweet out. He was just about to follow it up with another tweet. This is what the inside source is saying. But then the Mossad realized the op had turned horribly wrong and metastasized into a major catastrophe. You know, such as killing the ambassador, the wife of a Dutch ambassador. Oops, right? That didn't work out. And so suddenly they reel and backstep and create in the, oh, it's the, they're negligent. 7 years it had been stewing, and suddenly it blows up on the same day that we were bombing them. Totally coincidental. Now, Thierry Masson, very close to Syrian intel, advances the possibility that the attack was carried out with an unknown weapon, a missile, but not a nuclear bomb, tested in Syria in January 2020. We've shown you what the way this looked. Now, the test, which you can see right here, we've already shown you. Right? This is the explosion that took place in Syria that they said, oh, well, totally confusing. We don't even know what it was. Weird how it looks exactly like what we saw. Almost like they were testing it, like they do with all of these in Yemen and Gaza and Syria and Iraq and, you know, just blow up and test things so they can use them other places, like Lebanon. But it says neither Syria nor Iran ever made a reference to this unknown weapon. Interesting. It says that would explain why Netanyahu, contemplating the devastation in Beirut, decided that Israel would need to maintain a very low profile, which makes sense. Now, the Beirut explosion at first sight might not be seen as a deadly blow against the belt, might be seen as a deadly blow against the Belt and Road Initiative, which I thought was important to include. Everything that's happening right now seems to be directed at, from certain angles, directed at China, right? Stopping China's, you know, rising, overtaking U.S. preeminence, you know, getting too powerful because that's illegal, right? No, not really. Right. So what is illegal is taking nefarious illegal actions to suppress the growth of other countries. Right. That is illegal. I'm not saying China is good or anything else. I'm just saying that it's basic understanding that if you're going to pronounce yourself as the freedom loving democracy country of the world fighting for freedom, you can't then go take illegal actions to suppress economic growth because it just doesn't suit your interests. Kind of counters what you're saying. But, you know, I digress. But it's interesting to note that this is another act that seems to be attacking directly the Belt and Road Initiative, because the whole location here that we're talking about, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, as they point out in the article, is a cornerstone of the Southwest Asia Belt and Road Corridor. But he argues it might backfire because it might drive them to, you know, just kind of dig in with each other, which I do think will happen. This is what happens when you don't know what else to do, right? When you're a dying empire and you're being backed into a corner and all you have is military power and all you know how to do is fight, bomb, and invade. So when you start losing, what do? You attack, right? You accuse them. You create regime change. You create fake protests and then tell the world we need to help them, and then you go destroy the country, right? Play 1, 2, and 3. That's all they have. It's always important to keep in mind, he says, that the attack, as Trump called it, on Beirut's port, destroyed Lebanon's main grain silo. Apart from engineering the total destruction of the port, the nation's key trade lifeline. So it's almost like they targeted, just like they did in Yemen, the nation's key trade lifeline, which will only hurt them, including the people that they pretend they're trying to save on the U.S. side, and destabilize the country, which will then give them the excuse they want to point to it and say, we need to help because we're good people and we can't allow them to be suffering while we're ignoring an entire country of Yemen starving right over there, but don't talk about it. That would fit into a strategy of starving Lebanon. Exactly. On the same day, Lebanon became to a great extent dependent on Syrian for food. But it's interesting to note, as we keep telling you, that Syria's food is also under attack. It says that they now carry only a month's supply of wheat. Maybe that's why, you know, before they did this, they burned all of Syria's wheat fields. I don't know. It's almost like it all comes together. It's almost like they knew exactly what they were going to do, and they're starving these people out right in front of you. As at least one part of this narrative. Now, it says Syria is a huge exporter of organic wheat, And that's why the U.S., you know, routinely targets Syrian silos and burns its crops, you know, for freedom, right? Attempting also to starve Syria and force Damascus, already under harsh sanctions, to spend badly needed funds to buy food. Because, yeah, freedom. That's what good people do. Extort, rob, and destroy countries for your own economic interests, as you do the same to your own people. Pretty horrifying. But as I pointed out the other day, which, by the way, was on this video that I think they're trying to stop you from seeing, that Mossad is the one that gave the UK the information about this whole story. Oops. Once again, we've got the flow of information coming from Mossad, Israeli intelligence, handing it over to US to then, you know, do what they want with or drive them to whatever activities they wish. The whole thing. A foreign government reportedly tipped off MI5 to the explosive stockpile. And I take that back. This was the one we talked about before that was in different location. But the point is, the investigation had uncovered alleged Hezbollah stockpiles of ammonium nitrate had the involvement of Mossad as well. Just another note to keep in your mind, you know, that they won't tell you on the mainstream media. Now, before I get into the next one, this is what I wanted to show you this really quickly, just in case there was more to see in this. This is the video that they censored, that you're not allowed to see, showing you that Netanyahu warns Hezbollah, you know, that they tweeted this stuff out. I guess you're not allowed to report on what Israeli mainstream media is telling the world, that, look, we warned and threatened Hezbollah the day that we bombed them, or they got bombed, or, an accident happened, right? I mean, here's Netanyahu's own tweet, as I just showed you. We hit a cell, and now we hit the dispatchers. All right, but let's ignore that. Ignore his straight-up statement of attacking Hezbollah. You know, nothing to... Taken stride. God, it's just so frustrating. And it says, Netanyahu, these words are not in vain. Yeah, we know that because something happened. But what Syrian Girl pointed out, which is interesting, is they're censoring people right now in the midst of this conversation. But the media can go all out on saying, look, at, you know, they can speculate about all kinds of things they want. But when it comes down to topics like this, we're not allowed to speculate whether they were involved. Right? I mean, what they're saying right there is that they're, I think it was the, oh, actually, I forgot. I'm on the video right here. I've got the articles pulled up. The Business Insider keeps blowing up, Israel keeps blowing up military targets in Iran, hoping to force a confrontation before Trump's. This is mainstream media in the United States saying, yep, this is what's happening. They're bombing and creating explosions in Iran using cyber attacks, right? And that's the point that they're making here, is that they can speculate all they want about things that work for their narrative in regard to Israel or whatever else. But when it comes to this, when there's nothing but evidence to suggest they're the culprit, we're not allowed to speculate. How dare you speculate? Even though it's not really speculation when you're following the trail of evidence. As well as the fact that we point this out, that on July 13th, they openly said this is going to be a summer of nuclear sabotage for Iran, which ties in with Hezbollah and Lebanon in regard to how they view them. Here's the point where the IDF pinpointed the exact port as in a location they were trying to go after. But that's just all fake news, right? Because they censored the video. It must be fake news. Remember, this was local people saying that they had been flying jets around the area the whole time before it started. And by the way, I showed you this video. Remember that one at the thermal, which I do believe was not real. And I said as much on the show. I said I wasn't sure when I talked about this. And live on the show, we look and read the Associated Press video that says that it's not real, right? But that's probably why they censored it, because there's no context to them. They saw the video and now we can't allow them to play it. And here, like I'll go over the AP where it says it's not real. And some of the other things. And here's the point. Here's the one that I think is important for you to see again. The leader of the Israeli Zuhut Party said, I am happy with the scene of the Beirut explosion. This joy was given by God to the Israelis on the occasion of the Jewish Valentine's Day that started yesterday and ends today. Oh, that's fake news, Ryan. That's not even real. Oh, well, here's his actual post. Which, by the way, if you're willing to do your due diligence, as I did, is what that says. But they deleted it. Why would that be? Was it Facebook? Was it him? Who knows? Here's it is. Here's deleted. Content not available. Why? Well, maybe it's because Facebook said, well, that's, you know, violating our policies because you're being joyful about suffering. I don't know. More likely, they just don't want you to see the reality. and as the point she's making that the, you know, just the size is not correct, and on and on and on. But anyway, that video, that is the video. I'm simply going over the information, playing it all for you, letting you think for yourself. But according to YouTube, not allowed. Fake news. Censorable. Censorable. It's incredible. So somebody was pointing out the, how many, I want to see real quick, since we're on the backup channel. I want to see how many dislikes they said. Somebody said there's about 42 dislikes now. I love it. Let us take a look. Yep, that's so funny. 41 downvotes. Like, it's what's hilarious is that they are attacking the backup channel. Again, you're right. And this doesn't this vindicate what we're talking about? Like, how in the world would these people know? They are monitoring us. Otherwise, how would they know that we were live? Oh, I thought I was playing my video. How would they know that we were live on the backup channel unless they were monitoring our social media and know where we were going? It's vindicating. I thank you guys for being here because you make us aware that we're on the right track. And what's weird, as I always note, is that it's weird that, see, the 41 downvotes, if you take note after the video is done, they almost always go away mostly, which I don't even know what that means. Are these people, like, why would they come and troll the video, downvote a whole bunch of downvotes, and then remove them all when the video is done? Maybe it's so it changes the algorithm. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's a YouTube thing they're doing for them. I mean, who knows? But it shows you that there's an entire entity here who is following after the information that they are afraid of, clearly, and trying to manipulate the way it appears. But the fact that we're on the backup channel, it's just funny. It seems like they're just wasting their time. But thank you for being here. Thank you, all 41 of you, for giving us the extra views. Appreciate it. But back to the point is that Saudi Arabia is clearly tied up in all this. As even the Daily Beast is pointing out, that the moment this happened, Saudi disinfo accounts just blew up on the Beirut blast. A slew of conspiracy theories flying around social media by Saudi-linked accounts and others, that's the point, by the way, of the whole article, and I'll show you why, are seeking to cast blame on who is responsible. But I wanted to show you the point that they used to get to the larger point. This is where they bury the lead in regard to how they're trying to manipulate your perception. But the point is, almost immediately after the devastating Tuesday explosion that nearly destroyed Beirut and killed at least 137 people, including the wife of an ambassador, a number of verified Twitter accounts, verified, by the way, meaning Twitter has vetted them and says they're legitimate, linked to Saudi Arabia, right? So funny how they will destroy even a hint of accounts they claim are connected to some kind of state government, right? Those are Iranian accounts. Those are Chinese accounts. And by the way, I've proven 10 times over that most of them tend to be just regular people. But here are verifiable, even mainstream media calling them out, absolutely Saudi Arabian government-linked accounts that are verified too. Let's pretend that's because, you know, not because Saudi Arabia's got interest in Twitter, you know, because these guys are totally legitimate. Just realize how often and continually they violate their own rules, their own principles, their own standards. Nothing is sacred to these people. But, so, Saudi Arabian-linked accounts, which they should be censoring if they're viewing the same thing to everybody, even though they're not, started firing off tweets blaming the Iran-backed group Hezbollah. The moment it happened. So ask yourself again, how could they possibly have known it was Hezbollah the moment it happened unless they were involved? Saudi Arabia and their government are really bad at this, including their propaganda, everything, even their military. That's because they're not a real country. I mean, there's not the people there, the government itself. This is a vassal state that was created for these purposes. Without the assistance of Israel and the United States, Saudi Arabia, as it pertains to military and their agenda, the way that they're perceived would be, I don't think they would be here today. That's my take. Within 24 hours, the hashtag Hezbollah's ammonia burns Beirut was trending, even though authorities and the group itself denies any involvement. The disinformation is being generated and spread by four verified Saudi-linked accounts that have been active in recent years in disinformation campaigns designed to hurt Iranian interests. Surprise, surprise. In just 48 hours, the explosion had already had 14,000 interactions involving 9,870 unique accounts spreading lies, according to the person claiming that. Now, it says he says that as long as they're allowed on social media, quote, they will flourish without being controlled. They have created an ecosystem. He's talking about the allowable propaganda, right? The propaganda that suits the interest of Israel and the United States and their vassal states beneath them, right? This is the point. That they're censoring people, even like me, who are not funded by some outside source, regardless of how they perceive my perspective, or any other social media accounts that just happen to say something that they feel goes along with what anybody thinks in their government, which is totally impossible, right? That people could just organically have that opinion. Those are all being censored, but they're allowing this. They're creating an ecosystem of controllable information. But this whole bottom part, this whole thing, is the point of the article, in my opinion. All of that was just to make it seem like, look, we're pointing out how the Saudi Arabians are manipulating the story. But that's just to get you hooked in, because the point is to say, but Saudi-friendly accounts aren't the only ones. Guess what? Conspiracy theorists and QAnon, far-right, deep thoughts, it's just the whole thing, right? Dangerous conspiracy theories are spreading fake news about Israel and nukes and blah, and it's just, none of that is backed up by anything. Like, at least this whole first part of the article is backed up by sources and statements and information. This bottom part just basically makes an emotional plea for why anything online that they don't agree with is somehow dangerous. But you guys know what I think of QAnon. But the point is for them to just disparage across the board any narrative of Israel being involved or any narrative of a bomb just because they say QAnon is the point. QAnon is the new Alex Jones. It's the way that they sidestep and disparage something to make it look crazy. And whether that's the point of it or they're using it for that purpose, it doesn't change what's happening. You got some crazy people, and it's not just QAnon. There's people just as extreme on the other side of the false two-party paradigm. But they point to them and make that as if everyone thinks the same thing across the board on their side. But the point was to show you that disinfo was incredibly coming out of Saudi Arabia the moment this started. And think about how that ties back in with the main point. Now, we also realize that after all of this, and the lack of investigation by the people who swear they're fighting for everybody's best interest, the entire government is apparently resigning? I mean, this just seems farcical to me. It really does. Lebanese government resigns in the wake of protests after Beirut protests. Now, the government of Prime Minister Hassan Daib has resigned. They announced on Monday, today. Today. The whole government resigned. That's his quote. The whole government. This is what I said. I mean, this is just slapping us in the face. So while both the U.S. and Israeli governments are present in Lebanon to help, suddenly a regime change of a government they've been focused on just coincidentally happens all at once? Okay. I mean, I'm just exhausted. Like, that's just, I'm like, come on. Why don't they just say, we don't like these people. We're going to take what they have. I mean, for crying out loud, this is getting pathetic. It's so crazy obvious the way, I mean, again, this is the same thing I come back to. Regardless of your perception of the way this blast took happened, regardless of your perception of who's involved or the facts around it, it happened. And whether they made it happen or they're exploiting it after the fact, they're still using it. They're using the situation to drive in their agendas, which is the change in power that they can exploit. It's just, I mean, it really has to be that obvious to you. And now the point is we're continuing. The moment this started, we saw these protests and regime and all these, you know, people screaming about they want the new government and we want this and we want that. It's the same kind of color revolutions we've seen all over the place. I mean, why would the people of Lebanon, without any information, decide to rise up and call for some kind of change in administration after we don't even know what happened? And by the way, when you do your research, you'll find out that there is a far more, in my opinion, recognizable protests that are calling out Israel or the United States or people involved in Saudi Arabia, predominantly, you know, Israel, having whole demonstrations of, you know, stringing up a poster of Netanyahu. By the way, so are a bunch of people in Israel. But the reality is that it's a misrepresentation, just like the media misrepresented Yellow Vest, or just like the media misrepresents the protest in Iran about Soleimani, just like they misrepresent everything in their own interests. And now, what I find even more revealing is that after the government steps down, after they say, okay, you called for us to leave, we're stepping down, what happens? The protests go away? Everything resumes to normal? Democracy resumes? Nope, they keep going. So tell me this, when you get what you call for, don't you stop protesting? Yes, unless you're being driven for different reasons. Unless you're being driven for destabilization to suit interests of foreign powers. Yeah, seems pretty clear. But that's my take, not my fact. I want you to research it so you can think for yourself. But I made this point in Iraq. They were calling for the prime minister to step down. When he stepped down, they kept protesting. How does that make sense? I mean, it could. You could make it. There could be some narrative in there where they had different things they were calling for. But the point, and the point becomes clear that these people do not seem aimed at removing the government. They seem aimed at causing chaos, which is weird how interestingly correlated that is with what's happening in our country right now. You know, using protests to make everybody fight each other, destabilizing and distracting everybody while they achieve their goals. Weird. It's almost like, I don't know, they've only got three plays even when they're going after you as an American. Now, a few more things I want to point out just in foreign policy before I move on to the masks and stuff is the idea that this, in my opinion, is what it actually looks like when Hamas, who does have rockets, fires them. Hamas fires rockets into the sea in an open warning to Israel. I mean, I added open because that's the point. It's meant to be. They're saying, look, I mean, that's if this actually happened and if this is actually Hamas that fired them. And the only reason I say that is because I don't know. Not because there's some implication that I'm putting there for you. The point is, unless you know for a fact, we shouldn't just assume Hamas did it or assume that Israel did something or assume that the U.S. is behind it. Even though my opinion tends to be that's an easy guess because they're usually the one behind it, but you should not blindly assume that. So Hamas fires rockets, so we're being told, according to the Jewish News Syndicate, into the sea as a warning to Israel. Gaza residents cheer, they say, as the terror group launches at least four rockets into the Mediterranean. Now, let me ask you this. Do you see the Gazan people cheering when they shoot that single rocket that lands in the field? Why not? Why don't you see that? Why? Because it's not happening. That's my opinion. What you're seeing here is Gaza reacting to the constant bombing of them. And I think what's happening is the people of Gaza, who, yes, vote in Hamas, are calling for action because they're going, look, how can we just stand back and let them keep killing us? And Hamas knows that if they fire rockets at Israel, they'll all be blocked and stopped or not caught because they don't have guidance systems. They're just simply rockets that go where they go because that's all they really have access to in their open air prison of Gaza. So they know they're going to fire them in the ocean or the sea to say, this is where it's a display to appease the people who are unhappy that they don't have any response or options. That's just my take of the situation. But my point is that we know that they have rockets. We know that they can use them. But why in the world would they fire off a single rocket in a moment that least benefits them to give Israel the excuse to continue to attack them and kill their families? And then let it play out, and a week later, fire off another single rocket and allow it to happen again. What? I mean, does anybody believe that that actually makes sense? So when you see something like this, you need to ask yourself, is this the actual representation? As I keep showing you, that the leading munitions expert in Israel has openly stated that the Iron Dome is simply a fireworks display. That's not actually doing what we're being told. That's not my opinion. That's what the leading munitions expert in Israel has put on record. Now it says the Hamas terror group fired at least four rockets into the sea. It was cheered by Gaza residents because it was a warning. Again, I think it's pretty interesting that they don't cheer when they every other time that we never verify, right? It seems they're cheering because they're actually firing rockets. Anyway, oh, and again, they point out in the article, yeah, that, you know, just before this, Israel bombed a bunch of Hamas targets, even though it was one balloon that they couldn't even prove where it came from. Could have been anybody. Even it may, maybe it didn't even happen for all I know. But the point is, they were the ones that just got attacked. That's actually called defending yourself, even though they didn't even fight back. It's crazy. And of course, as Robert Inlakesh is pointing out, and as I think I forgot to mention in the other show, his part two of his documentary is now out, which I hope you will check out for yourself. And I'm actually I'll probably get him back on the show in the near future once we touch base again. But he points out breaking Israeli occupation forces demolish another Palestinian home. This is all happening in the middle of the pandemic, right? So Israel is destroying people's homes while we're told everybody's fighting a pandemic. Is that not going to, you know, spread the I mean, regardless of your perception of the COVID-19, taking their narrative and running with it, is that not going to spread the disease? Is that not going to make it worse? Are these people then, I mean, The point is, you have to be very clear. If you are looking at what the United States is laying down for the world, that we all have to do this, right? And as they'll take every shot they can to make China look bad, Iran look bad, here's Israel openly destroying people's homes, burning down clinics, throwing people in the street. I mean, I've gone over all this on the show during the pandemic, only because they're Palestinian. Because that's not racist or anything, right? That's just normal government stuff. You know, picking an entire race of people based on where they came from and what they believe in and treating them differently. Because that's normal, right? In the middle of the most outrageous rise in anti-racist mentality in our country, and we cannot recognize that Israel seems to be one of the most openly racist countries in the world. It's flagrant. Netanyahu himself will say this is the country for the Jews alone. But let's pretend like that is not a bad thing. If anyone anywhere in the world had come up and said, this is a country for Christian people only, do you think that would be allowed? It's unreal. It's something that needs to bother you. Something that we'll probably get censored for saying. And that has nothing to do with Jewish people at large. It has to do with the Israeli government. But that gets lost on anybody who doesn't want to hear what I'm honestly saying. But here they are destroying people's homes. There's one part that I needed you to see. Now, I warn you, this is difficult to watch. Not graphic, but difficult. Now I ask you, imagine if that was your grandmother. Imagine if that was your mom, your sister, your family, picking up their blown up flower pot, packing up the few belongings they still have left after they just blew up their entire house and bulldozed it over with your belongings inside. Imagine if that was your family. Does the justification that they're all terrorists make sense to you? Does which is a complete lie and misrepresentation? Does the justification that they're not allowed to be there make sense to you? That it's okay these people just continually get displaced over and over and destroyed based on lies about what's happening? Or regardless of what you think is happening, are you okay with this happening to people? I know that you guys aren't. I know it. But so many people out there are willing to allow this to happen. And this is in the middle of a pandemic. This woman is being put on the street. And if you couldn't hear it well enough, she's sobbing as she collects the few things that she has left to her life. It's difficult for me to watch stuff like this. I mean, it really is. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we are told doesn't matter. Right? Because Palestinians are all terrorists, as we're told. As people actually used to try to argue. But at the end of the day, your government is allowing this to happen. While they continue to press on you how righteous they are, how good they are, how they only fight for freedom and civilization, here they are literally destroying all of those things. For what? For what? Because a foreign government wants it. That's it. They say that they have a right to it. Even though people were there before them, right? God said they could have it. That's the story. Even though actual Orthodox Jews will tell you right now that that's completely antithetical, goes against Judaism. Because the claim is they're supposed to wait for the turn of the Messiah to reclaim their land. Guess what? That hasn't happened yet. So how do you explain that? Oh, well, I can tell you, Zionists pretend like that's not the case. They just remove that part. And then they sat around and said, where do we want to go? And they chose between multiple locations. And then they picked one and they said, that's where God said we should go because we chose it. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. But of course, these are things you're not allowed to say because they're true and because it makes Israel look bad. So it's racist. Of course, that's what makes sense. If it makes Israel look bad and it exposes their Israeli government crimes, well, that translates into racism today because that totally makes sense. This is the kind of thing they're actively doing. Here's another example, by the way. Not just a home, but a cave where Palestinians went to because they demolished their homes. So they were displaced in the beginning, forced into an area that they didn't want to go to. Mass ethnic cleansing took place where far too many people were killed. Then they went to a home that they tried to build. Or in general, they just went somewhere else. Then they went to a cave because they had nowhere else to go. And then they forced them out of the cave, right? Because that totally makes sense, because you don't have a permit to build that cave. Right, that's the story. So if anybody honest out there is still trying to pretend like this is about, you know, building rights and codes and everything, which is what they try to pretend, even though they will refuse over and over to ever give them the right to the home that they forced them into. I mean, think about how crazy it is to force you into a location and you settle in that location and then you come back years later and say, hey, you don't have permits for that location. And they go, well, you put us here. I mean, it's much more difficult and nuanced than that, but that's the basic breakdown. And they go, well, because you don't have a permit, you have to try and get a permit. I'm like, okay, give me a permit. And they go, no, you can't. You're not allowed one. Okay. And then a year later, they come back and go, well, because you don't have a permit, we're going to remove you from your home and destroy it. And we're going to, if you don't destroy it yourself, we're going to charge you to destroy your home. All very true. So here we are, where people in Palestine have chosen to build a house in a cave because they figured, hey, they can't destroy our cave. Well, they were wrong. Israeli authorities have forced a Palestinian family to demolish their home built inside of a cave on the northern part of the occupied West Bank. The first building in its kind to receive a demolition notice from Israel. The first cave in the history of this ridiculous apartheid system to actually be destroyed, or rather get a building notice that it needs to be demolished. A cave. He received the notice under the pretext that his home, get this, quote, lacks the necessary construction license. I'm not kidding you. So they and this is the point, they just arbitrarily, ubiquitously hand out this same lie to any Palestinian they want to remove. They say, well, you don't have a construction license, even though your house has been built and we put you in this location. So they remove their home and they put them somewhere else. And I'll tell you what, years later, that same family will be moved again under the same flimsy lie. It's not really a lie. It's a self-perpetuating problem. They make it. They don't give them the permits. They won't ever allow them to have them. So they can swing that around later and say, well, you don't have a permit, so you have to leave. And to a law-abiding person outside the country, well, that totally makes sense. They need the permits. In a corrupt system, not how that works. He says, I tried to build twice a house. He twice tried to build a house. But the occupation authorities, you know, the freedom-loving country that's only democracy in the Middle East, right? Told him twice it was forbidden to build in the area. And this isn't some, this, the idea is this is anywhere he wants to go, twice. Wherever he went, they said, sorry, you can't do it. You're not allowed. So he said when he was convinced that they might never obtain a license, which is what every Palestinian will tell you if you just care to listen, he decided to build his home inside a cave in the foothills overlooking a certain area, thinking that the Israeli regime would not possibly argue that the cave, as an ancient and natural formation, was illegally built. It says, however, he said he received the notice in July, this last month during the pandemic, along with 20 other Palestinian families in the village. So you have to understand, this has nothing to do with the location, the building structures, the permits. They gave all these notices to everybody in this area because they want the area. Because none of these people are going to be there anymore because they're using it for their own purposes, because Donald Trump is allowing it to happen. Because he is going along with this fake lie, this complete illusion of a deal of the century, where he will sign the Palestinians won't be displaced, and then Netanyahu displaces a whole bunch of them. He says this area will be only for Palestine, and Netanyahu takes that area. And you're still pretending like this deal is going on. This is always an illusion. It always has been. Now, when all 20 families are losing their homes because Israel refuses to give them permits that they say they require, along with the person in the cave in the same area, because they just don't want Palestinians there, as they will openly tell you as Israelis if you just care to listen. He said, I didn't make the cave. It has existed since antiquity. But guess what? They're still going to be removed. They're still going to lose their home again. It really should turn your stomach, guys. It really should bother you, this happening. And if you care at all, You should be reaching out to your government, which probably won't do anything, but at the very least, give them more to do. Call them, write them letters, make flyers, talk to everybody, show them what's going on. Yes, a lot of people are doing that, but if more did it, more would change. One person always makes a difference, despite how they try to batter you down with the idea that you're irrelevant. Except when it comes to voting, when every vote counts, unless you vote outside the two parties, well, then it doesn't matter. It's around and around we go as they counter their own things to suit their own narratives. That's what happens when you lie about everything. You eventually step on your previous lies. Now, the last few things in foreign policy before I move on is just a couple of quick points about this China idea. Going into the election, it's very clear they're trying to build the idea that China's trying to do something. But it's just Cold War propaganda. And you'll see exactly why. And this one is quite feeble and pathetic. Shipments of 20,000 fake IDs from China seized by feds ahead of the election. Oh my gosh, 20,000 fake IDs? That's crazy. Except that headline is a complete fact. That is a willful misrepresentation. That's coming straight from Zero Hedge, by the way. I think that suits what they've been doing along their China Trump narrative of the whole coronavirus thing. But it's just simply not true, and I'll show you why. It says, with 85 days until the presidential election, fears are increasing that foreign adversaries such as China, Russia, and Iran could attempt to undermine the election. Why? Because there's evidence of it? No, actually, because our politicians keep screaming about it. So that makes sense. Because politicians whose entire job rests on continuing to lie to us, let's just believe them. Because they have created an entire back and forth narrative about foreign interference that's never been verified. Now, of course, we know that all governments are trying to influence things. It's what they do. The U.S. government is, in fact, the obvious, most clear culprit around the world of influencing and overthrowing and regime changing that's happening in Lebanon right now. I'm not trying to say that China, Russia, and Iran are not doing the same things. The point is, there's nothing they can show you that makes this any more logical than just the fact that presidents, politicians are saying so. Foreign states, more specifically China, could use covert, overt measures to sway. Of course they could, right? Any government could. That statement is just, again, to reiterate, don't be fearful. China's coming. They could do this. China could do that. China could do any number of things. China could do anything. The fact is, they're all doing it. It says China could also be attempting to undermine the election, and this is where it gets to the actual point of the article. That's not true. It says China could also be attempting to undermine the election by sending counterfeit driver's license to the U.S. So this is a broad claim based on something that happened that's not verifiably tied back to the Chinese government. It could be attempting to undermine it by sending these. So far, the Customs and Border Protection officers working at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport have intercepted close to 20,000 counterfeit U.S. driver's licenses. Whoa, look at that. Maybe I was wrong. Oh, wait, shipped from China this year. Oh, wait a minute. So as they're claiming that the shipment of 20,000 IDs was stopped from China, no, actually what they're saying is over this entire year, they have stopped close to 20,000 counterfeit IDs coming through the airport from China. So it could be. It's not one shipment of 20,000 IDs. It's a lot of intermittent shipments of China sending counterfeit IDs. How much you want to bet? There's also things like that coming from other countries. You know, because there are just Chinese people and other kinds of people that do things like this across over the internet around the world. I'm not saying I know that for a fact China's not trying to meddle in the election. Again, I make it clear. I think they are. I think that's absolutely what these governments are doing. But to point to try to fearmonger Americans into thinking it's happening because Chicago O'Hare's airport has been stopping intermittent shipments over the whole year that may be close to 20,000 when all added together, not all in one shipment that just came in right before the election, which is how they're trying to sell that to you. The reality is it's just China sending things in regard to people's demands. I mean, you could make the same argument that they're... I don't want to get off the point. The idea is that just because it happens in China doesn't mean it's the Chinese government that's responsible. I just made that point. But this is what they want you to think. Remember the whole Russian dressing, quip about Trump and Russia? If I said to use Russian dressing, you guys freak out. Well, guess what? Here we are again. Anything China is Chinese government doing this. right? If any government, if any person, anybody on the Democratic side only has any kind of tangential connection to anything Chinese, suddenly they're a Chinese asset. But if China, if Republicans do, well, it's not the same thing. It's Russiagate in reverse. It's stupid. Not because it's, there's not some validity to them doing it, but because they are making things up in order to sell you on what they want you to think right now, which seems to suggest that it's not happening the way that they say it is. It says, and this is what I thought was incredibly humorous, criminal organizations use these counterfeit IDs to avoid attracting attention to their illegal activities. Yeah, you're right. You mean like the CIA? You mean like the FBI and the NSA? Like those kind of fake IDs? The kind of fake IDs that Epstein and the people that worked for our own government had? Yeah, exactly like that. It's funny how they don't think about that when they make that claim, because only, you know, high school students and college kids use fake IDs, and that's voting. That's what it's all about. No, this is just fake IDs in general. And the idea is that they could be made coming from any number of locations. And I think this is an overplay. And the idea is, yes, the people who use the most fake IDs are, in fact, the kind of government entities that are lying to you the most. That's the reality. Maybe that's what that's about. The point is, we don't know. But they will try their best to get you to think about it a very specific way. But then we also saw this just before this. Mysterious seeds illegally sent from China identified. Could be the same thing. Or it could be Chinese people trying to make a buck. I mean, this is how it goes. The same with Russia, the same with Iran, that the name becomes nefarious. Anything China is, oh my God, that must be evil and dangerous. Right? There are Chinese, that's simultaneously why they pretend they're trying to help the Chinese people who they are simultaneously demonizing. There's all kinds of industries and all kinds of entities who, you know, whether it's online or businesses who are trying to do things out of China, including people who aren't even Chinese. So it just becomes pretty stupid when we're seeing this stuff. Now, I think these specifically, the whole seeds coming in, this is Cold War propaganda. I don't buy this for a second, but I want you to come to your own conclusions about it. But when you see these things continuing to happen, uh-oh, Chinese seeds, uh-oh, Chinese IDs, and all of it centered around them trying to influence and manipulate our country, could be, but there's nothing that verifies that. Sort of how we're seeing this kind of overwhelming rise in this Gates-backed kind of health cabal in our country. And everything that you try to point out about it in any possible way gets deemed just fake news. Censored, in fact, in many cases. Right, so as we're talking about things like this, we need to see that we're in the midst of a massive, massive narrative control. More than I think I've ever seen. And what's most important to see is that this started before COVID-19. Oh, what do you know? Just like all the other things we talk about. Great article somebody sent me. And importantly, from December 17th, 2019. So arguably like right when this was starting. And in regard to awareness, let's say, because even in December, people were already, I mean, January, December was right when this was beginning. But the point is, we already know there's examples from multiple U.S. allies. This was going on way before it was first pointed out in China. In fact, numerous examples that we could point out in regard to the United States. But, you know, that's a different topic. Now, how Gates Foundation backed consultants distort global health work. Remember, this is before this started. These people were calling out what Gates was doing right up before this started, almost as if they were preparing for something like this. Now, it says the World Health Organization, and the writers, Julia and Maureen, has worked with six consultant groups as part of its current round of transformation. The consultancy firms, McKinsey, which is the one you should remember, BCG, Deloitte, Priva Group, Seek Development, and Delivery Associates, cost the international organization a combined $12 million, at least a quarter of which has been paid for directly by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's a lot. This, the Vox writers added, is unsurprising. Global health, a field dedicated to improving the health of and the well-being of poor and most vulnerable, has quietly developed a penchant for highly paid management consultants and their business world tools. Interesting. Global Health being the group they're working with. Now it says Belus, and these are their last names. Belus and, that's an incredibly interesting last name. Belus and Bizonere. I'm going to say Julia and Maureen. That's their first names. reached this conclusion after interviewing more than 80 global health leaders and staff, current and former consultants at multiple firms, researchers, healthcare professionals, and NGO workers, many of whom said that the consultants' presence in the field has become pervasive and ubiquitous. Now realize what that's saying. And it gets more nefarious as we go forward, but the point is that this is, these are people that they've reached out to within this industry who are all saying essentially a Gates-funded consultancy-driven idea has become pervasive and ubiquitous in the health, in the global health field. That these consultants who are being tapped by the very people who are pretending to help are in fact the ones that are wildly profiting and driving their agendas. And even in regard to the people within, the firms, the researchers, the consultants, the healthcare professionals, they're all saying this is pervasive, which is not a good thing. Now, it says, after 30 years of work at many institutions, nothing done by management consultants comes to mind as having been brilliant. But a lot has been inappropriate and wasteful of time and resources. That's in regard to all the consultants they continue to bring in. Now, it says that Madhu Pai, who directs McGill University's Global Health Program, wrote of an African colleague who has had to face kids with little or no experience coming all the time to advise her government on what to do about health. Pai calls this, quote, global health consulting malpractice. When you say, you know, kids, the point being these are, you know, young people that are all charged up from being hired from, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, coming from another place in the world that don't really know what they're talking about in regard to the location they're in and trying to tell these local experts what to do. Right? And this is what, I'm not going to jump ahead. There's a point at the end that makes that more relevant. The idea that there's something about this that's like, we're better than you, right? That we know better, right? But we're over here in the Western world and we're going to send our people over to tell you what to do. And that's not how this should be done. And that's the, and what they're doing, in fact, is changing the face of medicine everywhere and, you know, controlling it is the real point. Now, I forgot their first names. Julianne Marine, two groups, McKinsey and BCG, Boston Consulting Group, as the most prominent, indicating those two firms, quote, have consistently been among the top five professional services contractors at the Gates Foundation, even after the organization vowed to curtail spending on consultants beginning in 2015. So basically, even though they pulled back, they made sure that those two groups were still maintaining their focus and their, you know, funding and everything else. Now, Global Health, with support from Gates, has expanded considerably over the past two decades, you know, leading right up to where we are now. Since its inception in 2000, Gates has given more than $50 billion, an overwhelming majority of which has gone to global health and related fields. And remember, even though this money is going to these groups, we've shown you really clearly that these people have exponentially increased their wealth. And it's because they usually give the money to people who then will end up profiting them on the back end, even though it appears to be philanthropy. We've already talked about this. This is a manipulated situation that we're seeing. The modern day philanthropy, or even really further back, when going back to the Rockefellers, when their foundations, it's set up to make it appear that way, when in reality, it's just another way for them to enrich themselves. Now, as they wrote, the foundation's funding helped set up public-private partnerships like Gavi, which is very revealing. This is a group that is now leading, you know, that Trump is invested in, that the USAID is invested in. They're very clearly going along with it, is very clearly aligned with the agenda of mass vaccination for the world. Now, it says the foundation has also brought a way of working that has encouraged organizations like the World Health Organization to become highly consultant dependent. Now, hopefully you see the picture that's being painted here. Now, whether you want to argue with these entities, whether, you know, the World Health Organization, the UN type things that are, you know, just inherently corrupt, which I agree to a certain extent, regardless of your opinion on that, you can see a picture of a independent entity, a Gates, a foundation itself, Bill Gates individually, however you want to look at it, creating a consultancy-dependent situation where they are funding and pushing these consultants in through their own funding, who are then dictating the direction of the health policy from a global standpoint. And as well, it's a sort of disconnect, right? Well, we're not doing it, even though he's clearly the one funding them, driving their decisions. It says, all told, Gates has, quote, spent more than $300 million on McKinsey and BCG between 2006 and 2017, according to the foundation's tax returns. Now that's more, think about this, that is more money than the domestic health budget for an entire low-income country like Haiti. It's also roughly half of what the U.S. government spent, on McKinsey and BCG in the last decade. So not only is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funding McKinsey specifically, the entity that is driving this consultancy-dependent global health policy, but so is the U.S. government. Right, so even as they continue to pretend like we're pulling away from the World Health Organization, right, they're still funding things like Gavi or funding things like McKinsey, which are driving the policy of groups like the World Health Organization, which is predominantly being funded by Gates and Gavi. I mean, if you can't see how they're all in bed together, you're just not looking. Now, it says the growing reliance on what are often U.S. consulting firms also is a symptom of what in international development is often called the white savior complex. In other words, the work is still done by people in wealthy countries for people in developing countries, often without local participation. It says, quote, it's frustrating in 2019 that the flows of money and knowledge are entirely from north to south. The idea basically saying instead of, like I pointed out, instead of utilizing the expertise they have on the ground, that the, you know, and there are, even in places we want to call third world countries, there are highly educated doctors and scientists that have, that work in these areas, whether it's because of, you know, altruistic nature or not, it happens. And so these are experts. And again, in this case, they might even be there because of the fact that there's a problem there. So it could be altruistic in nature. But the point is that there are experts on the ground that are familiar with the situation. That should be the groups that we should be utilizing. Look, if you really actually want to increase and rise these entities up, these countries that you pretend need our help, what they really need is for these entities to get the hell out of the way and allow them to go the direction they want. But if you really wanted to help them, you could take that money and put it into the country. Fund local experts to drive the, and look, that would enrich the country more. But what you're doing is you're outsourcing it and paying Western entities to come in and direct and tell them what to do, which in most cases hurts them more, because I think we should all be realizing that what they're telling us to do is not in our best interest. All while they scream how they're saving the planet. The amount of money you'd pay for McKinsey or the other consultants, you could probably hire several deeply experienced country experts. But unfortunately, the national expertise is undervalued, or rather just they don't want it. Beyond the obvious inequities in pay and status, outside consultants often give advice that lacks context. Sandro Galea, dean of the Boston University School of Public Health, recalls management consultants advising government officials in Liberia. Get this. This is incredible. A decade ago in Liberia, to create a system for electronic medical records for the whole population. Now, does that make sense to you? As they point out, as Galea explains, she says, I'm thinking there isn't electricity here for 23 to 24 hours a day. Now, her point is, well, consultants are drawn to flashy technology, but that technology requires infrastructure like electricity that was non-existent. So let me ask you something. She, again, doesn't want to believe they have nefarious agendas. Do you want to believe that it's because they're drawn to flashy technology, or because they're being funded by people whose entire agenda is about creating digital medical records for the planet, which is what they're driving now, and for a different reason in a different location? I mean, just take a moment and think about how crazy that is. This is bad. This is in a country that has no electricity for 23 hours a day, and they were trying then to push, this is a decade ago, to push them to create electronic medical records. It's because they use these countries as their testing ground. It's Bill and Melinda Gates funded entities, U.S. government funded entities that are coming in and telling them they need to do these things, which are not in their best interest because they're testing them on them. And this is what we need to see. This was in December 2019. It says, despite such obvious pitfalls, however, the pattern continues. Gee, I wonder why. As Pai points out, the corporate way of thinking has become the way global health organizations think. Fascism, right? The corporate U.S. government blend. The point is these corporations are now driving their interest-based directives. Not about what's best for you. Not about what's healthiest for you. Not about what's even fighting the virus, if you believe that. In general, the point is it's about what's best for their business model. Which is why, by the way, the trillions of dollars they said was going to be helping you in your economy has gone to big business and you're still struggling because it was a bailout and they lied to you just like last time. It's just, you know, it's hard. I get it. It's hard to... I'm interestingly noticing that it looks like the chat stopped playing for some reason. I want to make sure that the stream is not down. It doesn't look like it. That's quite interesting. No, it looks like it's still live. Huh, that's odd. Am I the only one? I mean, is the chat not moving? Is that, I mean, that's very odd to me. Anyway, I mean, it's just so incredibly clear to me that this stuff is being shut down across the board. Where were we? Getting on to the mass discussion. Here we are. Now, this was pointed out by Cameron. Thank you for sharing all of this. Some excellent points about this specific company. Number one, Cuomo in New York relied on McKinsey. Remember, we're talking about McKinsey, the consultancy firm that is funded in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the U.S. government, who is driving countries to do things that are not necessarily in their best interest. Right? They don't really know what they're talking about, according to other experts. Probably because it's not about what they want you to do that's best for you. It's about an agenda. And that group, one of them anyway, McKinsey, was the group that Cuomo relied on to handle coronavirus response. He cited grim predictions from McKinsey to justify clearing up hospital bed space in New York by forcing nursing homes to accept positive coronavirus patients. And we know how that played out. That was driven by McKinsey's information. What do you know? Number two, McKinsey then analyzed data for a state report that Cuomo claims absolves him of blame for thousands of nursing home deaths. So not only did they give him the information that drove to the problem, they then give him follow-up information that allows him to say he's not at fault. Self-serving, isn't it? McKinsey's role in developing the after-action report on nursing homes deaths means the firm was analyzing the effects of policies it had a hand in creating. Excellent observation, and she's correct. McKinsey's grim projections of the pandemic and the peak of the pandemic have proved far off the mark, which you guys all know. They projected that New York would be between 55,000 and 110,000 hospital beds. Number four, the McKinsey model also projected that state would need between 25,000 and 37,000 ventilators, which we know actually end up killing most of the people that take them. New York ended up only reaching 17% of the number of hospital beds needed in McKinsey's doomsday scenario, but yet they're still pointing to things like this to justify where they are. New York Times reported that the state reached its peak number of ventilators needed at 4,600, around 18% of what they claimed they would need. Now, many people want to say, well, it's because they did such a good job. And not at all. Look at where they are right now. If you want to continue to pretend that masks and lockdowns are saving them, why are they one of the worst situations right now? Right. The point is that the science is becoming pretty clear that the actual lockdowns and actions they're taking are increasing the problem. Which, by the way, is what a lot of experts said before we got here. But they were all laughed at because that's not what they wanted you to think. Number seven, who benefits? According to the New York Times, McKinsey serves 90 of the largest 100 corporations in the world. What do you know about that? And who is benefiting the most again? Corporations and billionaires. Great, great little thread. I appreciate you putting that together, Carmen. Well done. And she points out here at the top, and I actually was just going over the breakdowns here, but what she said up here, conflicts of interest concern from 2011 about the WHO and McKinsey advisors. Interesting. So it says conflicts of interest concerned from 2011 about the WHO and McKinsey's advisors. This is the company that structured the privatization of the NHS, National Health System in the UK, and paid by Bill Gates, of course. Does anyone have these concerns today? Let's see what it says. WHO practices of using consulting firms. So it's exactly what we were just talking about. So it's just the same information. So the idea is they're essentially controlling this policy. This is the reality, guys. Before we even get to the topic, like as we're talking about this, what is this discussing? When they're controlling the policy, the consultants, what's the policy they're driving here? Right? What did it lead to? It led to the actions that our government took. It led to the lockdowns. It led to the social distancing. It led to the masks. It led to everything they've done based on the idea that this is something we should be concerned about. That's what McKinsey and these groups are driving. Whether it's the consultancies they send in, the consultants they send in to the local areas, or the information they hand out to people that use that information to justify their actions. So thinking about that, as we step into the next topic, I think we need to realize that it's very, very clear that we're now beginning to see even more, even small and less concerning health side effects from the use of these things they pushed on you without scientific evidence to suggest that they would do anything. Doctors, dentists warn of mask mouth. That's a real thing, by the way. And this is doctors and dentists are saying that they're seeing a new wave of dental issues from prolonged mask wearing. Now, anybody who understand, my family has worked in the dental industry. A person in my family managed dental offices for a very long time. The point is that when you understand the point, it's bacteria. That's what goes on in your mouth. When you get a cavity, when you have problems, that's bacteria collecting because of whatever's going on in your mouth. So when you're holding a mask over your face and the moisture collects and you're breathing in and out and it's creating this weird atmosphere in your mouth that your mouth's not used to, well, it creates a conducive location for even more bacteria growth. Pretty simple. So there's no, and this is why it's basic. These things cause potential health effects, regardless of the NIH studies that I've shown you 100 times, that NIH found 5 times over different studies that there are clear health side effects, lack of oxygen in the blood, headaches, all these different side effects that nobody has ever come around and shown to be false. That is what they found according to the NIH, period. So now we're having even more dentists and doctors come out and say, well, they're causing even just kind of external problems. But let's keep doing it anyway, even though the numbers are showing that the death rate's too low and that it's not as severe and they're lying about the numbers or misrepresenting the numbers and on and on and on. It says the wave is being coined mask mouth and includes symptoms like bad breath, tooth decay, and gum inflammation. Now, do you understand what one of the leading causes let me make sure I say this correctly. Now, as I'm trying, it's not tooth decay. Shoot, I'm so mad that I'm forgetting this right now. My family watching right now is probably getting mad at me that I'm not remembering these things. But the idea is that there is a problem that is specifically related to your mouth and your teeth and the idea of not keeping good health, oral hygiene, that is a leading cause of death in this country. If you guys remember it in the chat that apparently I can't see anymore, I'm not sure why, make sure and you include that. But this is what, if you look up some of these leading causes in regard to heart disease, right? Heart disease is a leading cause, which this problem I'm talking about leads directly to that. And the idea is that this is causing that. Tooth decay, gum inflammation. It leads to exactly that problem. So regardless of whether you want to pretend, you know, this is going to be represented as, you know, bad breath and, you know, uncomfortableness in your mouth. And that's not what that says. If it's actually causing tooth decay and gum inflammation, that means it's causing an incredibly quick increase in the kind of things that lead to heart disease, which is a leading cause of death in this country. So that actually becomes quite serious. But nobody wants to care about that. The point is you can see this is causing health effects. It says, quote, it's just not something we were expecting to see with a lot of mask wear. Actually, it was. She says, as we're wearing the mask rather than breathing through our nose, we're breathing through our mouth. Which I don't understand what that even means. They're actually claiming that when you have a mask on, you don't breathe through your nose? I mean, that's the most illogical thing. That's ridiculous. You breathe through your mouth and your nose every time you breathe. So... thanks, doctor. Good God. Anyway, the point is that we weren't expecting to see this with a lot of mask wear. That's just not true. Because if you actually ask a doctor or people that get stuck wearing masks during any reasons where they end up doing it for a period of time, not surgery, by the way, because that doesn't end up, okay, I mean, I guess it can. If you're on some hours long open heart surgery or whatever. But the point is that you will see an effect from that. Not necessarily in a couple hours tooth decay, but you will see the effect on your mouth. And this is not hard to see. And this is stuff that they've actually shown. I've actually gone over studies that talked about the peripheral, the tangential effects of these kind of things. So the point is there is science there. They just don't want you to know about it. We never thought of planes flying into buildings, right? Same kind of thing. We didn't expect the obvious health effects that we already studied to happen. Of course not. Now, Dr. Wach said a lack of humidity in the mouth causes dry mouth and less saliva is produced. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that breathing inside of an enclosed area reduces the humidity in your mouth? I mean, this just seems like they're trying to drive you in an illogical and very specific direction that just doesn't seem like it's connected. It says the term, now you could argue that your breath is, I guess in a way, drying out your mouth, which is what she's trying to say, but isn't your breath in and of itself is collecting humidity in that mask area. So I don't know. That just doesn't make sense to me. But it says the term is a playoff of meth mouth, which is a common term referred to patients who have tooth decay from methamphetamine use. Great. And it says, however, mask mouth isn't as visually glaring. Good. So it's a minor case of meth tooth, right? A minor case of meth mouth. It's okay. Right? No big deal. Doctors encourage continued mask use anyway and say the key to avoid any bacteria buildup is to consistently hydrate. So take your mask off as often as possible and hydrate. I mean, for crying out loud, right? So the mask is, you guys get it. I mean, it's just so ridiculous how constantly these things contradict each other. It says, quote, just because we're wearing a mask, we're not chewing gum and not worried about people smelling bad breath, it doesn't mean we're not having bad breath. You still have to concentrate on oral hygiene. Of course, so the doctor, who is well aware that bad breath is the least of their problems if tooth decay and inflammation are happening, and yet she drives you into that conclusion that, well, bad breath, so, you know, we're not chewing gum and stuff, so we need to realize. I mean, it's just so apparent to me how they're trying to, even in this kind of thing. This is them, in my opinion, jumping ahead of the narrative to say, yes, we're aware that this is causing incredibly mass spread effects that so many people are being affected by, which, by the way, there's probably people already trying to capitalize on pharmaceutical drugs and treatments for your face and lotions for mask wearers and blah, blah, blah. It's probably all happening right now. A huge boon for Big Pharma, more than anybody, it would seem. But if we're going to pretend like there's not some kind of negative effect here, then you're just flat out lying. Now, another interesting point on the mask I wanted to show you, I'll tell you right now, arguably this specific video is a bad example only because this kid seems to have his mask ridiculously high on his face. So, it's the one that I had. At the end of the day, the example is the same. And really, this is the video that I want you to watch because this guy explains what this is. But regardless of whether the mask was further down on his chin, it is the same effect. You can find there's videos like this all around the internet right now. Now, I'm not telling you this proves anything necessarily, but just consider what he's saying. What he's saying is California makes everybody wear a mask. COVID-19 cases skyrocket in the middle of summer. Masks spread the virus, this is what he's saying, by distributing gases at eye level instead of the nostrils, forcing it to the ground away from the eyes. That's an incredibly interesting observation. These people are making us sick with their ignorance, he says. Now, watch what this looks like. Again, even if it was pulled down below to a little bit further down below his eyes, it would still act the same way because we know there's a gap between your nose, right? So watch. And I think this is in slight slow motion. Breathes in. It's a vaporizer. Now watch where it goes. I think he's doing this because he thinks it looks cool, and it looks pretty cool, but what the point he's making is, without a mask on and the way your body is designed or your face is designed, it's to exhale what is arguably a bad substance, the carbon dioxide and things that you don't want, away from your body. But in this case, while you're wearing the mask, and by the way, that includes whatever spittle and aerosolized whatever's coming out of your mouth, virus or otherwise. So when you're wearing a mask, as opposed to it shooting down and away from your face, it actually directs it back up and around your head, especially things that are aerosolized that aren't going to go away. They're going to float. So it's going to look again, watch the first part. It comes out and it shoots up and around your head. So ask yourself, if that is droplets, aerosolized virus, is it not clearly making it worse that it's staying around your face as opposed to going away and outward? Now, of course, the argument is that the mask is to help prevent other people from getting sick. Okay. So the point would be that it's better to keep this around you than allow it to continue to go out to other people. But doesn't that seem counterintuitive to you? I mean, none of this adds up. Now, of course, I should continue to go into the reality that the studies of the masks are very clear, even coming from all of Denmark's government and all the different people around the world, Nobel laureates and on, that are saying that this doesn't make sense, that the mask science is clear, that there's not enough evidence to suggest any reduction in transmission, whether we're talking N95, whether we're talking regular medical masks, cloth masks, which they're forcing people to take, and almost everyone is wearing, their own studies find that they increase the risk of infection by a dramatic amount. On and on and on, but that's all fake news, right? But I want you to see this and realize how interesting it is that that is what he's pointing out. In this video, he does a great job explaining it. It's pretty alarming. And after that, we need to realize that because this is actually a point that I hadn't considered, surprisingly, actually, since I've talked about this 100,000 times, with 194 billion masks and gloves used monthly. Surprise, surprise, a new wave of pollution hits oceans and beaches. So while we were barely starting to become aware of this ongoing floating island of trash throughout our, you know, oceans, which is a real thing, by the way, about the size of Texas or bigger, floating in the ocean because we just dump all of our trash and don't want to, out of sight, out of mind, right? Well, now, because just like everything else, because COVID, because fear, because nothing else matters, we're just polluting more than we ever have before, putting plastic and things that we'll continue to collect right into our oceans and our world. I mean, this is just disgusting. And by the way, something that we know, based on the evidence, does not do what they're claiming it does. But they're forcing it on you anyway, while people like BlackRock are aggressively invested in the companies that make the things they're forcing you to wear. Not conflict of interest or anything. Here's a Tennessee council member, after what we just showed you, by the way, and the fact that all these things are coming around to the reality that the science is not there. Entire countries are saying that they don't know what they're talking about. Here is a council member of a local government saying that people should be charged with murder or attempted murder for not wearing a mask. I have it queued up. Now, this is a little bit low on the volume, I believe. So turn your volume up, listen closely, but I want you to hear what she says.
Councilmember Hurt, you your hand up, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. My question goes back to legislation, and I don't know if Mike Denson could be the one to answer the question. But my concern is, you know, I work for an organization that if they pass a virus, then they are tried for murder or attempted murder if they are not told. And this person who may very well pass this virus that's out in the air because they're not wearing a mask is basically doing the same thing to someone who contracts it and dies from it. It seems to me that we have been more reactive as opposed to proactive, and a little too late, too little. So my thing is maybe there should be legislation, stronger legislation. I don't know if Mike Jameson can speak to it, but maybe there needs to be stronger legislation to say that if you do not wear a mask and you subject exposure of this virus to someone else, then there will be some stronger penalty as it is in other viruses that are exposed.
Thank you, Councilor Hurt. The officers do have the discretion, if they encounter someone who is flagrantly violating the mask ordinance, to take the conduct of that individual at hand and issue other citations for other criminal violations, including, for example, disorderly conduct or even potentially assault. You may have read the episode where there was allegedly unintentional coughing by...
I mean, it keeps going. The point is that, you know, whether we're talking assault or disorderly conduct, right, for not wearing a mask, right? You're not being disorderly. You're exercising your constitutional rights. You're doing what you believe in with your own body. It's amazing that we can be in a position in the world today where that is not a justifiable excuse. That it's your body, your choice. Right? Funny how that works in some cases, but not in others, right? Always contradicting themselves when it matters, right? So it's alarming for them to come out and outright claim that people, at least suggest that people should be charged with something if they just don't wear a mask. I mean, if you can't see how this went from no one's going to make you do that, you're so crazy. So now we're literally in the situation where people are, they're actually considering people being charged with violent crimes for not doing what they're telling you to do based on false science or the lack of science. Pretty revealing. Now, something just popped up while I was watching that I wanted to cover real quick. That didn't look like... Oh, it's right here. This seemed interestingly related. Explosions reported at Iraqi Shiite militia targets, U.S. military convoy. Now recognize this is the whole thing, guys. This is what it's all about. Shiites. That's what this is. Right, all these groups. I mean, this goes back to this. This is a history lesson to understand why Saudi, Israel, including the United States as well, aggressively like this is an ideological war. They are fighting Shiites, whether in Lebanon or Iraq or Syria or Iran, and whether or not these were connected at all, other than their ideology. But they just claim it's Iran bad guy, and that is even though that's not actually a legal excuse. Even though they're actually committing war crimes by openly bombing a country they're not at war with while killing civilians in the process. But as long as they say Iran bad guy, everyone just goes, of course, because bad guy. You know, the people in the know, people that want to toe the line. But we're seeing explosions now reported right now. They're claiming, as an Iraqi Shiite militia, they're claiming targets a U.S. convoy. Now, ask yourself multiple ways you can look at this. Is this another fake story being created to justify more action from U.S. and Israel against Iranian locations somewhere? Is this now going to be tied back to Lebanon in some way so they can then try to make it seem like this was a Lebanon act to continue to drive the actions against Lebanon? I mean, however you look at this, it's going to tie back to Iran in some way, which is what they're saying. But it says an explosion has rocked a convoy carrying U.S. military gear in Iraq. So first of all, we have to realize that the U.S. government is illegally occupying Iraq. The Iraqi people have already voted them out. They don't want them there. So when they get attacked for illegally occupying an area under the U.N. laws, that's legal. You are allowed armed rebellion under the U.N. under the United Nations. The rules of military conduct, the rules of this is specifically addressing occupation. And there's no one is under the illusion this is not some kind of an occupation. The U.S. military, the U.S. government is occupying Iraq. They're occupying Syria. They're occupying Afghanistan. They're occupying all kinds of places illegally. So here we have people in this location who are attacking them as they're driving with weapons in their trucks in their own territory, right? So this is Iraqi territory. So imagine it was some kind of reverse situation and you saw, you know, here's Lebanon shipping missiles over to an area that they're close to Iran. Well, they would attack that and say we were justified because they were moving missiles. And okay, well, it's not illegal to move missiles that you are buying or that your country owns. But in this case, we have a foreign government who is not supposed to be in Iraq, who is moving shipments of weapons that are arguably going to be used against their people. And yet this is going to be used as an attack against the U.S. like every other one of them. This is near the Kuwait border. It's according to Iraqi security services. They said it was the Shiite militia behind the attack. Of course, now we have to remember the Iraqi security forces services, right? I mean, this is, we just saw another change in administration and the people that are arguably at least somewhat in trying to play the game and keep everybody happy, including the U.S. government. Now it says the blast targeted a convoy near the, Dyrrhachian crossing in the Iraq-Kuwait border late on Monday after a militia group smuggled an explosive device into the area, according to Reuters, citing security sources, right? So security sources on the ground who are arguably being influenced and manipulated by interest of the U.S. government who control them, then through Reuters reported that they thought it was this group who didn't explode. I mean, think about how crazy that is. Three different levels of command there that have an interest in making the story what they want. So it's third-hand information, solid. Footage purported to show the moment of an attack circulating on media, social media, with unconfirmed reports stating that the Ashab al-Kaif militia group had taken responsibility, which is interesting because they're going to, I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be blamed to the PMU, which will be blamed at Iran. So again, it's interesting to see these videos, right? I mean, so somebody was waiting for that to happen. So if it was them and they're not claiming it, right, why would they allow the video to be released? I mean, this stuff doesn't make any sense until you begin to realize that it's just bolstering their narrative, just like all the rest of this nonsense they continue to talk about. And again, guess what? Okay, this one was... Okay, so I guess they're not reporting yet on what caused it, how much you want to bet it's going to end up to be a rocket. Nice, neat little bow, right? All these rockets flying everywhere. Oh, don't worry, it's a Katyusha rocket, which we're pretending ties back to Iran. even though they're Soviet era and barely usable at this point, even though Iran and these groups, including the Iraqi militias, have far more sophisticated weapons that are actually coming from the U.S. government. Oh, it's just ridiculous. But I wanted to include that because it just happened. I found that interesting. It popped up my phone while I was reviewing the other information. But back to the issue at hand that we were talking about. Mask mouth. Mass in general. The pollution. Your own government telling you that you're going to be charged with murder for not doing what you're told. A great video here by Tony Heller in regard to New Zealand in particular. Now, this video is essentially, I'm not going to go through all of it, but I want you just to, you can watch it for yourself. It's only 9 minutes. A really great perspective on this, that basically New Zealand, and as well as the rest of the world for that matter, but New Zealand's an excellent case, as Fiji as well, because they have such a low amount of cases. At this point, now they're saying 100 days without community transmission. But what they did to get that was destroy their entire country, destroy their entire economy, their entire tourist economy, and basically create a situation where they ruined everything else to create a situation where they're safe from something that's arguably not that dangerous, based on the information we have today. Now, he's pointing out, they're just with glee expressing how we got this far with zero care, you know, 100 days with no transmission, on and on and on. But tourism generated a direct contribution to the GDP of $16.2 billion, or 5.8% of the GDP. Tourism was their biggest industry, contributing 21% to foreign exchange earnings. Apparently, he said that there was something like, I thought I had it right in here, millions and millions of people, I don't want to misquote it, I thought it was a high, tens of millions of people, millions, represent their tourist industry. Right now, all of them, and which is a huge portion of their populace, don't have any kind of job, because the tourism is dead right now because of what they did. They shut everything down. Actually, she showed you this right here, right? So the only way in is through the Auckland Airport or through boats, and they've shut everything down. Tourism is dead in New Zealand. But she's calling for, she called in the military because of a few cases in a certain location, right? They're towing the line. That's what this is. And she points out, as he points out in the video, that they not only removed everything from you, they also destroyed your civil rights. All to make sure that they could, you know, step on a few cases that were causing problems for political aspects around the world. Oh, right. They took guns away from everybody too. Right? So they removed your rights, they took your guns away, they removed your business, they put you in a corner, they removed the tourist industry, they destroyed their economy, they destroyed their whole country, all to make sure that they could get down to less than 100 cases over the process of a certain period of time. But when you actually look at this stuff, this is Sweden, for instance, which is something we just talked about in regard to Denmark. Not Sweden, but Denmark, but the general area. And we did mention Sweden in the discussion about Denmark, but the idea that these places have shown you what is the actual way to do, the actual path to take, right? He compares it in this video to other locations that didn't do what they did. I think it might be the second one. But the point is, oh yeah, right here, versus you can see in every case. Actually, this is a better graph. I thought he had this one at the end right here. You can see in every case here that their predictions of what they were going to happen, what was going to happen in Sweden or other places like Denmark, all the gray lines are the predictions. The blue line is what actually happened. Now, regardless of what the media is continuing to scream at you, they are wrong. And what happened in Sweden and Denmark are showing you what the reality is. And it's incredible. It's a great video he does. But this is the point I really wanted you to see as he plays here at the end. This is what Stockholm in Sweden, this is what it looks like in Sweden now. In July 31st to the 20th, this is a group that has allowed this to take its natural course, knowing that it wasn't as severe as we're being told, not forcing masks, and here they are right now, living their lives. And again, as we're watching this, consider where you are right now. Consider where your family is and what's going on in this country. How people are being forcefully quarantined against their will. How people are being arrested because they're not doing what they're told. How and this is happening right now in the world. That right now, while half the world is in terror and things are shut down and people are losing their entire livelihoods, here is what it looks like to not be like that. While the death rate and the cases and everything else is basically petering out to nothing.
That's what.
Right? So that is what it looks like in a place where you don't have an authoritarian government. Or I shouldn't, I mean, I have a hard time even considering that even this was a choice done for altruistic reasons, because I'm very, very, you know how my opinions of governments in general. Oh, sorry. Somebody just mentioned me here. Sorry. Let me play it again so you guys can see that. My apologies. I'm not. Oh, see, this is what happens when I can't see the chat, because I don't know what's going on with my chat. I've got it off to the side, but they just stopped showing it to me. Here's the video again. I mean, you guys get the point, but I'll play it again. So again, the point is just, this is what's happening in Sweden.
That's what herd immunity looks like.
As he says, that's what herd immunity looks like. But it's important, aside from the vaccine discussion in general, right? Well, technically, this isn't even about vaccines, right? This is about general herd immunity, which is a different thing in regard to vaccine herd immunity. This is about people in general life creating antibodies, which is what your body's supposed to do in regard to something that's going on. So his point is, this is what it looks like to allow the reality to take place and not fear monger and force you and remove your rights to achieve goals that had nothing to do with COVID-19. It's very interesting. But the point in showing this is to ask the question, right? If that's happening right now and no one is dropping dead in the streets, people aren't overcome with illness in Sweden and Denmark and all these locations, so why aren't we talking about it? Why aren't we reflecting on that where we are? How does that not directly contradict everything that we're being told? If the point is that the world's going to come to an end if we don't, I mean, look, if you have actual governments, members of government actually suggesting that we be charged with murder for not wearing a mask, and here in another part of the country, they all just didn't do anything and everything's going back to normal, and it already has been for quite a long time. How do you rectify that? They both can't exist in the same time frame here, because one is wrong. I think it's pretty clear which one is. It's just disconcerting to realize that this is the kind of thing that your government is allowing to happen to you. Now, this may explain why this kind of stuff is happening, right? Why California's public health director abruptly resigns in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, or even with that fact, why Brian Hook decided to resign, right? People are running from this. I think it's because this is unprecedented. We're in a situation where they are forcing things from a legal standpoint that they know will not hold up. And the only reason that makes sense is if you think that there's an end game they're driving toward that will make that court system no longer relevant, or, you know, accountability no longer relevant. A complete change in our entire paradigm. That's what this seems to be driving toward. So when you have the public health director resign, that needs to show you something. Doesn't mean it proves anything, but just think about what that suggests. Now it says that they're saying that Gavin Newsom most likely trying to push for fake numbers of COVID, making public health director resign. Now, whether or not you agree with that, the misrepresentation of what's happening for the end's goal of creating more control, getting more resources for your own administration, is absolutely driving the choices they're making. On top of that, they said, this is huge. And by the way, I did look into this. I just wanted to share this tweet because of the way they framed it. Then I have the link beneath it. But this is huge, he says. Belarus president was offered bribes of $900 million by the World Bank to lock down his country and enforce Italy-style restrictions. It's in Polish, but someone out there may be able to do an English version. Now, I've seen people already breaking this down. Here's the actual tweet and the video itself where you can see him talking about this. Now, if I remember correctly, this was the president who claimed that he thought somebody tried to get him sick. That somebody tried to get him sick with the coronavirus. Let me see. Now, that one says something different. Let me see. Yeah, look at this. This becomes incredibly relevant, don't you think? Belarus president claims he was intentionally infected with COVID-19. Now, of course, that's just his claim. Nothing to it other than what he feels about it. But it's interesting now that we come full circle and we're talking about, not that one. Where am I? We're talking about this one here. Where now it turns out that he's claiming that he was bribed almost $1 billion to make him go to lockdown. Now, why would that be? I mean, I could give you reasons of what I think, but at the end of the day, it seems like it's because they're trying to create a complete narrative where there's not places like Sweden and Denmark showing you that they're lying to you. But if you consider this with that, kind of fleshes it out a bit. California will soon be paying $1,250 to people who test positive for coronavirus. Weirdly, the same amount they were giving for stimulus checks, and they're going to be paying people who test positive, almost like an incentive to get sick. But at the same time, my family still hasn't gotten their stimulus check. It's like, how long we can keep saying that, how embarrassing it is that they can act like they're saving people and helping you while bailing out big business while families aren't getting what they say. But this is really alarming to me. Paying you to get it. And it said, not to get it, but to test, paying you if you test positive. Now it says California has now approved a pilot plan, approved to pay that much money to anyone who tests positive for coronavirus. This is why, to encourage them to stay at home and self-isolate. Now ask yourself this. This is going to incentivize people to get tested in general, because why not if they're going to get paid for it? Which means they're going to be a lot more false negatives, which we know are happening because they've admitted it happens with PCR tests. They've admitted they're conflating numbers and on and on and on. So it's going to translate into more numbers no matter what. But on top of that, it's going to incentivize people to stay at home and self-isolate, which is part of the agenda. So they're paying you to go along with the agenda. That's how that translates. Sort of how it seems like they paid him to do the same thing. So it's like the clear point is that we aren't buying it, and they're even trying to bribe you to go along with it. That's how I feel this translates. But it weirdly seems almost in a way to incentivize you to either get tested or get sick yourself. But it seems weird that it's driving you towards staying home when we're seeing more and more that the lockdowns increasingly suggest to create more problems. But in another vein of the same discussion, a national lockdown, according to the Fed, could be the economy's best hope. Yeah, he actually said that. A national lockdown, the very thing that destroyed our economy, could be our economy's best hope. Oh, but that's because we destroyed it already. Oh, I see, right? No, the point is lockdowns are the problem. And now that we destroyed the economy, well, the problem is that if we don't lock down, everyone's going to die, and then we're in an economic problem. No, we're already there. This is just the Fed weighing in to achieve the same goal, because all of them are part of the problem. And remember, the Fed is essentially BlackRock now, right? The Fed, the Treasury, BlackRock, and a clearly Israeli-tied foreign equity firm is clearly, well, technically not foreign, but that it's an international entity, the largest in the world, the most powerful, most alarming secret banking institution in the planet, controls this information, right? Controls the flow of money, controls the U.S. Treasury. Not to suggest that means that they're controlling what this person says, but at the end of the day, the Fed is saying, yes, lockdowns are what we need. That's not suspicious at all. He says, if we aren't willing to take this action, meaning national lockdowns, millions more cases with a million more deaths are likely. But even think about what he's saying right there. They already locked everything down. They claimed millions of deaths were going to happen. That didn't happen. We saw cases rise. Deaths aren't. But he's claiming that because cases rise, that means more deaths. That is simply not backed up by the facts. But they're just running with the same fear-mongering narrative. Masks save lives. The deaths are all coming. We're all in danger. This is worse than Ebola. We're all going to die. Right? They're just running with it. More cases mean more deaths, because nope, it doesn't. We've made that clear. And by the way, why in the world would we care what a person at the Federal Reserve has to say about what we should do in regard to our health? Oh, that's right, because people with money are more important than actual doctors. Bill Gates can tell us, but doctors can't. The Fed can stand up and tell us what to do, but doctors can't, because that totally makes sense. It says giving up too early costs the economy, according to him. So he's saying that not keeping the country locked down long enough was what destroyed the economy. Well, isn't that self-serving? So it's your fault. Again, America, it's your fault, right? Just like before. It's not their fault for putting you on a lockdown that destroyed our economy. It's your fault for not doing what you're told. If only we had listened, the economy would be fine. It says what the country needs now, he says, is, quote, a more stringent, uniform lockdown state by state until the virus can be brought under control. Then we can return to normal economic activity with no more confidence. Oh yeah, once that's not doesn't exist anymore, once all we have left is Walmart and Boeing and big company, that will return to, quote, normal. Despicable. Absolutely despicable. Now, to end, a very interesting discussion that I had to include that, again, also came out in 2019, right before this all started, almost as a way to patch up the broken reputation of Fort Detrick, but at the same time pointing to some of the bad things they've done in the past, which I argue was a bad move because most people didn't know this stuff, I think. This is my take on the propaganda mindset of what this is. I could be wrong. But at the end of the day, I think they are under the impression that most people are aware of MKUltra and the what it actually meant and what they did with that. And I argue that's not the case. So what this article is meant to do, in my opinion, is put this out there and say, see, here's all the things you guys know about. And it's tied to Fort Detrick. But they became a good thing and they became something that fought against bad things in the future. Right before this all started. You'll see what I mean. The secret history of Fort Detrick. The CIA's base for mind control experiments. Now, just really think about how this reflects on where we are right now. Now, in 1954, a prison doctor in Kentucky isolated 7 black inmates and fed them double, triple, and quadruple doses of LSD for 77 days straight. God, that makes my teeth hurt. That's rough. No one knows what became of the victims. They may have died without knowing they were part of the CIA's highly secretive program to develop ways to control minds, a program based out of a little-known army base with a dark past, Fort Detrick. Wasn't that revealing? This is, again, from the Politico magazine. Now, it says, 67 years ago. However, when the Army selected Detrick as the place to develop its super-secret plans to wage germ warfare, the area around the base looked much different. In fact, it was chosen for its isolation. That's because Detrick's still thriving today as the Army's principal base for biological research, and now encompassing nearly 600 buildings on 13,000 acres, was for years the nerve center of the CIA's hidden chemical and mind control empire. That left unsaid that it's not happening anymore. That's what they want you to take. But that's not what's happening. Detrick is today one of the world's cutting-edge laboratories for research into toxins and antitoxins, of course, because that's what they want you to know. Not that they're making bioweapons to justify their quote-unquote vaccines. Nope. That they're laboratories for research into toxins and antitoxins. But ask yourself, when's the last time anything of value came from Fort Detrick about ways to help you in your daily life, as opposed to making bioweapons that they aren't in existence yet to claim that we need to make a vaccine for something that's not here yet? Because that logic just totally sound. The place where defenses are developed against every plague, right? That's what they want you to believe. But that's not what makes sense. And what anybody honest, including people like Dr. Boyle, who wrote the Biowarfare Act that's still being used today, will openly tell you. Developed against every plague from crop fungus to Ebola. Now, its leading role in the field is widely recognized. That's what they really want you. That's what they want you to think. By the way, that's not the case. I don't think for one second that the world recognizes Fort Detrick as anything other than what it really is. Now, it says for decades, though, much of what went on at the base was a closely held secret. Directors at the CIA mind control program, MKUltra, which used Detrick as a key base, destroyed most of their records in 1973, right when they pretended they stopped. Most of its secrets have been revealed in declassified documents through interviews as a result of congressional investigations. Together, those sources reveal Detrick's central role in MKUltra and in the manufacture of poisons intended to kill foreign leaders. Yeah, exactly. And the really big point to think about here is that the CIA, our own government, was effectively conducting this shadow operation when even Congress allegedly didn't know about it. So think about how that could be happening today. And it says, alarmed by reports in 1942 that Japanese forces were waging germ warfare in China, the Army decided to launch a secret program to develop biological weapons. Right, so they were alarmed that Japanese forces with, you know, Dr. Ishii, we've talked about, were waging germ warfare. So what'd they do? They fought him and then they brought him over to us and they used him, right? If they were so concerned about the dangers of this, they would have stopped it. But nope, they took it, they used it, they researched it, and that's what created the biowarfare program we use today. Simple facts, easy to look up. The same way that the pretend we said, we are going to stop the Nazis, and we took all of their evil scientists and used them to create NASA. Also an easy fact to look up. So, are we trying to stop the evil bad things? Or are we trying to fight the governments to take their evil bad things and use them for ourselves? It hired, it says, actually, well, the next part was right here. In 1951, Dulles hired a chemist to design, this is Alan Dulles, who ran the CIA, has an airport named after him, not a good dude, hired a chemist to design and oversee a systematic search for the key to mind control. The man he chose, Sidley Gottlieb, which you probably should know about, you probably heard about, key figure in this whole thing, was not part of the Silver Spoon aristocracy from which most officers of the early CIA were recruited. Ask yourself why. He was instead a 33-year-old Jew from an immigrant family who limped and stuttered. He also meditated. It says, lived in a remote cabin without running water and rose before dawn to milk his goats. Because that's all important, right? The point is, just a normal guy, right? But it's weird that they step out of their usual routine, only picking people from the aristocracy, you know, the oligarchy, people on the top, and pick this 33-year-old Jew immigrant from, you know, a farm. Does that make sense to you? It shouldn't, because there's likely more to that story. But it says Gottlieb wanted to use Dietrich's assets to propel his mind control project to new heights. He asked Dulles, at the time, the leader of the CIA, to negotiate an accord that would formalize the connection between the military and the CIA in this pursuit. To formalize a connection between the military and the CIA in regard to, you know, creating biological warfare. Taking, it says, under the arrangement's provisions, according to a later report, CIA acquired the knowledge, skill, and faculties of the Army to develop biological weapons suited for CIA use, which would mean assassinations, you know, covert operations, the kind of stuff that we're arguably seeing today. Taking advantage of this arrangement, Sidney Gottlieb, created a hidden CIA enclave inside Camp Dietrich. So, is that still happening now? That's something you should be asking. The whole shadow government concept, you know, the continuity of government dating back to Reagan, creating a shadow side government that operated independently of our government process that was not accountable to the public of the American people. And here in a separate scenario, we have this person creating essentially a side entity, a hidden CIA enclave in Camp Dietrich. His handful of CIA chemists, right? This lone farmer this doesn't make any sense. This handful of CIA chemists worked so closely with their comrades in the Special Operations Division that they became a single unit. Some scientists outside the tight-knit group suspected what was happening. Do you know what a self-contained, off-the-shelf operation means? One of them asked. The CIA was running one in my lab, they said. They were testing psychochemicals and running experiments in my labs that they weren't telling me. Gottlieb searched relentlessly for a way to blast away human minds so new ones could be implanted in their place. It doesn't matter what you think. I mean, look, understand that however you view the U.S. government, whether it makes a difference, this was in 1950 or 2020, they made a conscious choice as a government to test on unwitting people, in a way to find ways to remove their brain, their mind, and replace it with something they could control. Does that sound like good people? This is being driven by the military, by the CIA, by our government. This is at the same time when on the surface they were talking about righteous and, you know, doing altruism and fighting for freedom and the same stuff we're seeing today. Behind that, they were destroying lives and trying to find ways to control people. Sounds like exactly what's going on now. In the United States, his victims were unwitting subjects at jails and hospitals, including a federal prison in Atlanta and an addiction research center in Lexington, Kentucky. Right? Let's not pretend like back then they didn't have the same constitution. They didn't have the same rights. They didn't have the same, you know, even then they had even more, you know, lip service to why those things mattered. Today they act like it's some kind of archaic concept. but then still pretend like it matters when they want to. Back then, it was even more important, and they still didn't care. Using people in hospitals, not even just jails, but hospitals. So people that were in the hospital because they were sick, dying, they were testing on them, trying to replace their brains with something they could control. Good, honest, hardworking American government, right? Good people. Now, to be clear, the same point from before, that doesn't mean that every single person in the government was part of this. But it means that the driving force at the top was 100%. Now, in Europe and East Asia, it says Gottlieb's victims were prisoners in secret detention centers. So again, just like today, they were doing it in our country, but also outsourcing it to places around the world where they could do the far, far more nefarious things. In Europe and East Asia, his victims were prisoners in a secret detention center. One of those centers, built in the basement of a former villa in the German town of Kronberg, might have been the first secret CIA prison. Oh, isn't that cheeky and fun? While CIA scientists and their former Nazi comrades sat before a stone fireplace discussing the techniques of mind control, prisoners in basement cells were being prepared as subjects in brutal and sometimes fatal experiments. One of the most well-known victims of the MKUltra experiments was Frank Olson. Now, this is really interesting. Olson was a CIA officer who had spent his entire career at Fort Detrick and knew its deepest secrets. Now, when he began musing about quitting the CIA, his comrades saw a security threat. Gottlieb summoned the team to a retreat and arranged for Olson to be drugged with LSD. A week later, Olson died in a plunge from a hotel window in New York. They actually did a whole Netflix series about this. The CIA, of course, called it a suicide. Olson's family believes he was thrown from the window to prevent him from revealing what was brewing inside Camp Dietrich. Think about that. You know what that makes me think of? It makes me think of people like Jerome Hauer and 9/11, and how an individual, one of the leading experts on Osama bin Laden, was suddenly rearranged and planted at the offices of World Trade Center the day this happened, and nobody else showed up for work, not even Jerome Hauer, who was supposed to be there. So Jerome Hauer, an insider in regard to the 9/11 cover-up, was most certainly choosing to bring this guy over to this right before it started. Whether or not that was because he knew what was going to happen or not, which I do think, is up for you to decide. But it's very suspicious that the one guy who would have ended up being one of the most important individuals in regard to Osama bin Laden, who they claim was behind it, suddenly was moved there the day it happened and died in the building when nobody else came along with him. Same thing here. We're talking about an individual who had inside information about something that they didn't want getting out. So right before he was going to leave, they suddenly brought him to a retreat, drugged him up with LSD, and they claim he jumped out of a window. Isn't that self-serving? It says, nonetheless, Fort Detrick, as it was renamed in 1956, remained Gottlieb's chemical base. After the end of MKUltra, which ultimately didn't actually end, and that's pretty clear, so there's actual documents that show that it went on long after they said it stopped, he used it to develop and store the CIA's arsenal of poisons. So realize that even after they claim it stopped, this guy was still working on ways to control your mind, along with biological manipulation. Seems very relevant to right this moment, doesn't it? Using bioweapons and then simultaneously trying to control us with some kind of technocratic surveillance contact tracing rollout. Yeah, their ideas have evolved a little, but yep, it's the same concept. After the end of it, he says, he used it to develop the store of poisons in his freezers. Sidney Gottlieb, he kept biological agents that could cause diseases, including smallpox, tuberculosis, and anthrax, as well as a number of organic toxins. This is back in 1956. Remember the anthrax false flag that ended up tracing back to Fort Detrick? Yeah, let's pretend like that's not connected at all. It says, including snake venom, paralytic shellfish poisons. The kind of things the CIA uses to secretly kill people. He developed poisons intended to kill Cuban leader Fidel Castro. This, yeah, exactly. The person that, I mean, think about people like Castro or people like Chavez that have claimed they've tried to assassinate him numerous times. Things just like this. Now it says, during this period, Fort Detrick's public profile rose uncomfortably. No one knew the CIA was making poisons there. But its role as the country's principal center for research into biological and anti-crop warfare, you know, like the bugs they use to spread on other countries to destroy their crops, or, you know, manipulating the weather to stop them from getting rain, on and on. Their anti-crop warfare, they pretend wasn't happening, became very clear. From mid-1959 to mid-1960, protesters convened once a week at the gate of Fort Detrick. No rationalization of defense can justify the evil mass destruction and disease, they wrote in a statement. So ask yourself, how is it that all the way back in 1960s, that these people were well aware what Fort Detrick was, what they were doing? They were protesting, screaming at it, and all they had to do, the government, was act like they stopped doing it, and suddenly we just stopped paying attention. How is it that in 2020, Americans are not aware enough to protest outside of a very, very alarming location that shouldn't be there in our country? And back in the 60s, they were very well aware and knew what was going on. I mean, it's just incredible to me. Which brings to mind this video that I've played more than once, which actually, I forgot that I had changed all these. Let me see if I can't find that real quick. The Fort Detrick one. Now, I've played this opening many times for you guys. The documentary about Fort Detrick. See if I still have a clip somewhere. Doesn't look like it. Oh, there we go. Perfect. Well, see, I'll play just the intro. I did have a longer clip that I wanted to show you. Yeah, that's not it. All right. Well, here, I'm going to play this. This is the intro that I play sometimes to open the show, but at least has some of the information I wanted to play for you.
We have over 1,300 documented cancer victims right now, just in a one-mile radius. I'll be quite honest with you. It's changed my life so radically. Sometimes I don't even know who I am.
1,300 people in a one-mile radius. And what's causing so much sickness? It turns out all these victims have one thing in common. They live next to a military base called Fort Detrick.
At the end of the day, well, there's a lot more, by the way, that I would play. It's only about a couple more. The documentary, which I have to grab again so I can make sure I can make that clip. But the guy in that car goes on to talk about how every single person on his street has cancer. Both his daughter, his wife, and another part of his family have all died from cancer. They've all died from different diseases and different things, which the doctors continue to tell them is environmental. Why is nobody doing anything about it? Why does nothing change? Because there's much more serious things going on right there than our government wants you to know about. It gets quelled. It gets stopped. That's pretty incredible. I mean, just looking at that map to show all those people around, specifically around this area, and nothing changes? They're protesting back in the 60s about what they were doing there, knowing what was going on, and it's still going on today, and we still don't realize it. It's really incredible to me. But the reality is that this never stopped. In 1970, Richard Nixon ordered all government agencies to destroy their supplies of biological toxins, which they did not, and that's easily verifiable. But they said they did. Right? As they said, Army, of course, Politico just blindly stated, well, if Army scientists can lie. Well, no, they didn't. And I'd like to believe that if they can make such an incredibly in-depth article about information and nuance, they would have been able to simply do a research on that and find out that, no, it's very obvious that they did not destroy everything. Now, they do go on to make a point, which I'm going to read next, about Gottlieb intentionally, individually staving things. But the point is that the military, the U.S. government, verifiably did not destroy these things. It's very clear. I mean, just like in 2014, when people suddenly started caring again about gain of function, they pretended like they outsourced it over to China, but they didn't. They kept doing it and did it in China. And this is also very clear. So it's frustrating when you see these kind of lies coming from, because you can tell that even when they're telling you this information, this is what shows you that the article is meant to ultimately be a limited hangout. It's trying to keep you, I mean, literally, they could write an entire article of things that you might find interesting, just to implant one sentence just like that. That's it. That's the kind of manipulation and propaganda we deal with today. Write thousands of articles a day just to get in a couple sentences here and there to formulate a general narrative around the superfluous information they're throwing at you. Right? That this is now a good thing, that they're no longer making bad things, that when they told them to shut it down, they all did it. None of that's true. Now, Gottlieb, it says, hesitated. He had spent years assembling the deadly pharmacopoeia and did not want to destroy it. After meeting with the CIA director, Richard Helms, he reluctantly agreed that he had no choice. Again, yeah, no, not at all. One batch, a supremely potent shellfish poison known as saxitoxin, escaped destruction, though. two canisters containing nearly 11 grams of saxitoxin, enough to kill 55,000 people, were in Gottlieb's depot at Fort Detrick. So again, let's just pretend like, sure, he agreed, but then only snuck a couple things out. No, the reality is they pretended like they were doing this, and they never stopped the program. Before Army technicians could remove them, two officers from the Special Operations Division packed them into a trunk of a car and drove them to the Navy Bureau of Medicine and Surgery in Washington, where the CIA maintained a small chemical warehouse. Yep, didn't stop it at all. One of Gottlieb's aides later testified that he had ordered this operation without informing his boss. And that sentence is there as a way to make it seem like it was only Gottlieb and not the government. By the time the saxitoxin was discovered and destroyed, of course, in 1975, Gottlieb had retired. Oh, well, that sums it all up, right? If that was actually what happened and he was only retired, well, he would have been arrested. I mean, let's be real about this. This guy, if the narrative is true, he was told to stop, stole a very, very dangerous thing that could kill thousands of people, 55,000 people, lied to his officers, which is a crime, had them ship it to another location, stored it, and then they found it later and destroyed it. But he's retired, so it's all good, right? That, like I always tell you, right, the removal from office is their biggest penalty. Gottlieb broke the law if the narrative is to be believed. But if he's retired and no longer being held accountable, well, then we have to infer from that that he very clearly did what he was told. But don't think too deep into it, because it's all lies and fake news, right? But that's a good place to end on in general. I mean, this is something that I think is really clear, guys. The idea that this has always been going on, it's the same stuff. All they do is evolve their narrative, and they evolve their claims, and they evolve their actions, and the narrative the objective remains the same. It's all about their overarching agendas. And whether it's the technocratic thing, or whether it's just control, or whether that's any number of things, we can see the same people, the same drives, the same lies that stem as far back as you want to look. And really, as always, it's just a matter of whether you want to see it or will allow yourself to see it. Now, thank you so much for everybody that stayed tuned today. Quite a long show, actually. I didn't even realize. I was just kind of going off the cuff here today because it's on the backup channel. And, you know, just I wanted to bring this show out there for all of you that are the hardcore, you know, Last American Vagabond viewers. So, you know, the truth still needs to get out there. So to end today for the 114 people that are watching, in general sense, my content on any channel I post is not necessarily considered Creative Commons. All of our website stuff is Creative Commons for the most part, to share the article with the video. But my video content, I don't necessarily post that way for many different reasons. Not because I don't want honest people to help share it to get the information out, but because there's a lot of other things that happen where people will share your content and change it and manipulate it and make it look like you said other things and then put all of their links beneath it and not even link back to your channel. Like, that kind of stuff is ridiculous. The point is, what I'm saying now is that everybody watching with this video, I'm actually asking you, take the video, upload it on your channel, post it everywhere you can, title it whatever you want. I don't even care. Post it up there, get it out there, get the information out on every, I would be happy if I come up tomorrow and see 45 different versions of this video all across YouTube. That would make me very happy. It's up to you guys. You can share it, do what you want with it. The point is, I'm going to continue to try to do work on the backup channel over the week. But it might be a little less than usual. I might as well try to use this time to try to do some of the things on the back end. But know that the clips won't be happening until I come back, because I can't upload anything. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being diehard supporters. You are why I am here. You are why this outlet exists. We are people funded from top to bottom. Not a cent comes to me from anybody other than people like you who want to donate because they believe in what we're doing. My message and what I report comes from me alone. And I decide what I think is best based on what I think is best for you and our society at large. And the point being to drive you to come to your own conclusions on that information. So thank you. I love you all, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Today, the job of building this nation geographically is completed. There are no new frontiers within our borders. So, to what new horizons can we look now? Where are tomorrow's opportunities? What's ahead for you, for your children? The frontiers of the future are not on any map. They are in the test tubes and laboratories of the great industries.
The Jacobardi case was one of the great judicial moments in world history, and the public was totally unaware it was actually happening as the process was being engaged. General Electric and Professor Jacobardi went to the patent office with a little microbe that eats up oil spills. They said they had modified this microbe in the laboratory, and therefore it was an invention. The patent office, the U.S. government, took a look at this, quote, invention, and they said, no way. The patent statutes don't cover living things. This is not an invention. Turned down. Then General Electric and Dr. Jacobardi appealed to the U.S. Customs Court of Appeal. And to everyone's surprise, by a 3-2 decision, they overrode the patent office. We bring good things to life. And they said, this microbe looks more like a detergent or a reagent than a horse or a honeybee. I laughed because they didn't understand basic biology. It looked like a chemical to them. Had it had an antenna or eyes or wings or legs, it would never have crossed their table and been patented. Then the patent office appealed. And what the public should realize now is the patent office was very clear that you can't patent life. My organization provided the main amicus curiae brief. If you allow the patent on this microbe, we argued, it means that without any congressional guidance or public discussion, corporations will own the blueprints of life. When they made the decision, we lost by 5-4, and Chief Justice Warren Burger said, sure, some of these are big issues, but we think this is a small decision. 7 years later, the U.S. Patent Office issued a one-sentence decree. You can patent anything in the world that's alive except a full-birth human being. We've all been hearing about the announcement that we have mapped the human genome, but what the public doesn't know is now there's a great race by genomic companies and biotech companies and life science companies to find the treasure in the map. The treasure are the individual genes that make up the blueprint of the human race. Every time they capture a gene and isolate it, these biotech companies claim it as intellectual property. The breast cancer.